Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. If you were just joining us for the first time, thanks for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin, and I'm here, as I always am, with Dom. Dom, what's happening?
Not much. I'm full of appreciation for all of life's blessings. And one of those is we are joined today by America's sweetheart and professional Eric Stein impersonator, Koz. Koz, how are you doing?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? America's player here. How you guys doing?
Primetime 69, Eric Stein in the building. Now, actually, Eric Stein's going to be someone that we're going to be talking about today because we're going to be doing a very exciting episode, if I may say so myself, doing basically what the three of us did with Survivor after Kim took it down last season, which is today with Big Brother, we're going to be going through each of the winners' games. And in front of me, I have a piece of paper. And the reason is because on this piece of paper is my list of winners, because we have each gone through the labor of ranking each of the winners' games. We're going to be going through each of our rankings, going in-depth on each of the winners. And then when we're done with all that, we're going to be talking about some of the other notable players who didn't end up winning the game, but we definitely think deserve to be in the conversation. So, yeah, guys, I think if you guys are ready to get going, if there's anything, honestly, I think we're good to just basically be getting set right into this. One thing I think worth pointing out, however, we're going to be taking this basically chronologically. We're going to be making two exceptions. Because in the scope of Big Brother history, there are really two players now that have solidified themselves as effectively immortal compared to the rest of the people who have played. Those being, of course, Dan Giesling and Dr. Will Kirby. We're going to be pushing those two for the end of the winners segment, which means we're going to be starting with Lisa because no one watched Big Brother 1 because that show was AIDS. And I guess good job, Eddie, but it doesn't really suit this conversation. So, Kasa, you're excited to get into this.
I am. It's time to get dirty and punch it in. Let's go, fellas.
Well, hopefully we can punch it in a little bit better than Dan did.
Ouch. Too far, too far.
That's cut. You have to wait for more than like 3 days after the finale to go with that one. But yeah, Koz, give us your thoughts on Lisa to start things off.
So, you know, Lisa's an interesting one for me in that I think she has some good skill for the game overall, but the big thing I hate about the way she played is that she got to the end of the game with the only two good players in her entire season. So she stuck herself in a situation where, quite frankly, if the jury hadn't been set up the way it was, she probably would have lost. I at least hope so. I think she got very lucky to win her season going up against the only two people who could probably beat her in that season.
Well, I would say the same thing about Danielle and Jason in the sense that being there with Lisa, at least knowing the format of the way the jury works at the time, all three of them were kind of there with the only two other decent players.
It's a fair point, but I think it made sense for Danielle at least because she knew that both people would take her. So I think if you're going to punish anybody for that, it should be Lisa and Jason, but not Danielle.
Oh, okay.
Well, we kind of want to separate this to talk about kind of Lisa individually and then maybe Daniel and Jason as a unit just after that, but you can't really divorce the three just because obviously their games are all intertwined. I think it's perfectly fair to criticize Danielle for that because she knew, or at least she should have known, that she couldn't be either Lisa or Jason. So, yes, she locked up her final two spot, but only by being the person that each of them knew they could beat.
Well, do you think that she actually knew that she could lose to both of them? Because I think it's similar to what we just saw in Big Brother 14 where the person who both people are going to take to the final three is sitting there thinking, I don't care how I get there, I just want to get to the final two and argue my case. You know, you can argue that maybe Danielle should have taken some other people, but I think once she's in that situation, she's thinking, you know, I got here because both of these people are going to take me, and I'm confident that I can outtalk my way. I think she thought she was going to beat them, and it just didn't work out in her favor.
Well, I think specifically the final four, where Jason had sole voting power for that round, if I remember correctly, and she could have convinced him, presumably, to vote out Lisa and keep Amy, who she would have annihilated in the jury vote, and who probably would have taken her as well. And admittedly, would have been less strong competition, so there's a higher chance that Jason wins, which is probably the worst outcome in that case. But even so, though, I think you just take out Lisa and try to get to the final two with Amy. It seems like a pretty easy call.
It does, and I think that's, you know, probably the biggest weakness in Danielle's game. But as far as Lisa, I mean, I think that's one of the things you have to give her credit for is that she was able to go to Danielle and Jason and say, look, we had this alliance, let's stick together. And she, in a weird way, sort of misted her way into the final three and then ended up getting there in the final two and annihilating Danielle.
Yeah, it's kind of to me – oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think it's kind of symbolic of how the season was received that our discussion about Lisa's winner quickly turned into a discussion about Danielle. But that's really emblematic of the way the whole season went. And I think it is fair to criticize Lisa for ending up in the final three with those two specific people when maybe you could argue there were configurations which would have been better for her. I think that speaks negatively to the degree of control that she had over the game, where those who were her closest allies and Daniel and Jason essentially had their pick of the whole house who they wanted to take with them. But at the same time, it kind of speaks well to of Lisa that she was able to convince them to do that. Well, maybe not actively convince them, but there was no, like, she didn't actively sabotage that.
It reminded me a bit of, well, not reminded, because I'm not sure even which came first chronologically, but this is to me a lot like Danny Boatwright in Survivor Guatemala, where she probably should be going at Final Four, but for whatever reason she doesn't. And then the couple, in that case, Rafe and Stephanie, that had been running it the whole time, end up, she wins the final HOH and then smashes, you know, Danny smashes Stephanie, and Lisa ironically smashes Danny, being Danielle Reyes. So I feel like that parallel is there. And I think a lot of the reason for that, I think there are some comparisons that can be made between her and Danny Boatwright, which is these two are both very strong social players, I would say. I think Lisa, people were always very, willing to talk to Lisa about the game, I think. And even, Danielle, who was, if for all intents and purposes, kind of like the one running it at a certain point, was still willing to, talk game with her and treated her kind of like as an equal. And I think everyone always respected Lisa and really liked Lisa at the end of the day, certainly.
Yeah, she's very likable, obviously, a good social player in terms of just getting people to like her and open up to her a little bit. Obviously very attractive, which helps. I think she's got a lot of the basic skills that you look for in a player. The problem is I just don't think she executed all that well on them, and she just got very lucky at the end game.
Right. I think one thing that really improved my estimation of her was when they had to vote to bring in Invictus Haskell back, and she chose not to bring back Eric, which you can argue shows that she was playing too emotional a game before that point. But the fact that she was able to put that aside and then, go into game mode, I think shows that she wasn't just a kind of happy to be there person that maybe she might have appeared before that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I have. No, definitely. I think that's something I have here in my notes as well, is this relationship with Eric is something that, of course, in an era that's effectively pre-veto, where you can't use it on yourself, so it's good. I guess they could use it on each other, but nonetheless, a couple is a much bigger target, where when you have to nominate two people, that's an automatic, easy reason for someone, especially back when the game was so much more humanized than I would say it is now. And I like that. I very much like that move on her part not to vote Eric back in, because I think she realized quite quickly once Eric was gone, she could kind of slide back into the background, because there were other, Amy was making a fool out of herself. Roddy was really stepping up as a target. Kiara was annoying people. Jerry and Josh are annoying people. It's great for her not having Eric in there. And I think she recognized that. And I think a lot, like a high percentage of Big Brother people who had been in a showmance at one point, and if given the opportunity, would snap vote to evict whoever it was, or vote to bring back in whoever they were with.
Yeah, she obviously did a good job realizing that she could sort of, I hate to use the word float, but just sort of blend into the background there if she didn't bring Eric back. So I think, she was always focused, or maybe not always, but from that point on, she was certainly focused on winning the game as opposed to just being there and just making it another week. So, I definitely respect that part of her game. And I think, like we were talking about, just the basic likability of her, I think that definitely improved her standing in the game and allowed her to sort of skate through for a couple weeks without being a real target.
Yeah, definitely. And like I said, I swear it's this social, she makes people feel comfortable, like they can come talk to her. Cause I feel like if anyone at that situation felt like, oh, I need a vote, or I need someone I can kind of go throw ideas off of, oh, Lisa doesn't really have anything major going on right now, and she's someone that seems approachable. I think that's a big, big element to her success. Yeah. And now one thing I want to mention about Lisa is, certainly her win gets diminished quite a bit by the notion that Danielle got robbed of a victory. Do you think that it's completely justifiable and fair that she shouldn't get full credit here, or even given that they all knew it was going to be in the rules? Or do you think maybe the hate's gone too far, or do you have just general thoughts on this, on that?
Well, this bitter Dan fan is going to say, yes, I agree that diminishes her game. Obviously, there's going to be some people that are listening to this and go, Kaz, you're obviously an idiot. Whoever wins deserved it. But I do think at the end of the day, your own personal feelings on the jury have to come into play at least a little bit. And as someone who would have voted for Danielle over Lisa, I can't help but diminish Lisa's game because of that.
Yeah, that's fair. I think – oh, go ahead, Dan.
Well, I'm inclined to disagree just because, firstly, I think that there's a high chance that Lisa beats her anyway, even if the DRs aren't seen by the jury. And also, I have less sympathy for Danielle because she was naturally playing for an endgame in which she would have lost. So the fact that she lost in a way that she didn't intend to lose doesn't really change that for me.
That's a fair point. I don't disagree with you. I just I tend to be a huge Danielle Reyes fanboy, so I'd like to give her as much credit as I feel she deserves as someone who, had I been in the jury, would have been voting for her. But I do agree with your points.
All right. Well, I think this is a good opportunity to move on to Danielle and just get that discussion in right now. But before we do, where does Lisa fit onto our winner rankings then? Colin, if you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I will absolutely start. I'll tell you guys right now, I basically have my winner rankings broken down into five general tiers. Lisa falls into the third tier. She is my number 7 winning game, her game in Big Brother 3.
Cos?
That seems about right. I've got her at 9, but I think I could have her as high as 7, so I think somewhere in that range, sort of in the middle or just below it, is about right.
All right, Dom, where do you have her?
Well, when I was compiling my list, I had the top two locked in, as I think we all did, and I had the bottom three set in stone as well, and you had all these other winners kind of in the middle, and it was up in the air where I was going to place them, and I found reasons to diminish everyone else's games in my mind, so Lisa kind of gradually rose up by default to the point where she was sitting like the 4-5 range without really me having a reason for her being there, and I think that is too high for her, but at the same time, I'm not sure it's fair to put her lower. If that makes sense?
Oh, it is.
Okay.
Do you have a concrete place for her on your list as it's finalized or no?
I'm tempted to put her in like the 5-6 range, maybe.
All right. Well, so I guess you're higher on her than we are. I'm going to be curious to hear who you're moving down, though.
I don't think it's because I like Lisa and her game any more than you two do. I think it's because I identified faults in other people's games that I think many other people disagree with.
And Lisa did not have those faults?
Well, she has some, but they're just less obvious than the others. Like, if you ask me to pick out the one single big flaw in Lisa's game, I'm not sure I could pinpoint that.
Yeah, no, okay, that's fair. I mean, Lisa is certainly someone that could easily, like, one thing I actually want to bring up is she was invited back as, like, a nominee for All-Stars, but didn't end up getting a key. I think she could have easily done some damage in there. If she could, you know, if she could have gotten through the early weeks with all the girls getting catty with each other. What do we make of this? Because it seems like of a winner, how's Erica getting in over her if they're, you know, they're both very hot women, and it seems like Lisa probably would have gotten the call on top of over Erica.
Well, wasn't Erica a fan favorite in Big Brother 4? Like, didn't she win the America's poll thing in certain weeks?
Yeah, she did, but I just assumed they just rigged that.
Maybe. I think it's that. Obviously, if you're inviting Lisa back, it's because she's a winner. But part of the reason she won is she has this personality which doesn't make her stand out from the crowd. Like, she's not abrasive, she's not arrogant, she doesn't cause any drama. And obviously, that's great if you're going to a Big Brother game and hoping to win, but it's not great if you're a producer looking for people who are going to make a season more interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
I gotta say, though, I'm glad you guys brought that up, because I know it's a little off topic, but I still don't understand why she wasn't involved in Big Brother All-Stars. I mean, if you're gonna bring back some of the women that they brought back that season, how do you not at least bring back someone just because they were a winner? I mean, even though she might not be the most exciting person, how the hell does she not get in over Erica, who I don't understand how anybody could like or dislike Erica. She was a total bore.
But maybe they just wanted Will to be the only winner for some reason?
I guess so. Maybe it's a legacy thing of, you know, this is the greatest winner we've had so far, so we're going to bring only him back. But I just don't get that. At the end of the day, I think it would have been interesting to have multiple winners coming back and competing, especially someone like Lisa, who would not have been a big target, I don't think. And I think she definitely could have snaked through, you know, into the final 4 or 5, and, you know, people would have said, whoa, you know, how'd she do this again?
Well, perhaps it was because they had already Danielle and Marcellus probably as locks to get in. And they wanted, like, the Allison and Erica drama because they had beef at the end of Big Brother 4.
You're probably right, but, man, that's such a terrible reason to bring Erica back. I will never understand why she got the return invite.
It might be a season distribution thing, but if you're going to bring back, what, 4 people from Big Brother 6, I think you can, and, what, 3 from Big Brother 5, I think you can happily extend a third slot to Big Brother 3. Although I personally would have been more inclined to use that on Roddy.
Yeah, they've sent too many guys.
Yeah, that's fair. My final thought on Lisa, and I'm intrigued to hear what you make of this, is she kind of reminded me of if Kim Spradlin had a younger sister. Like, where I think they're very similar personality-wise, but Kim's just more, I don't know. Obviously, Kim is a much better player of games like this than Lisa is, I think. Although the margin is maybe smaller than people might think. But they do remind me of each other more than I expected them to.
She's like a mix of Kim and Parvati to me.
No, come on.
Come on. The flirty sense, in like personality sense.
Yeah, but Lisa's not flirty. She's just, I mean,
I would say she is.
I don't think Lisa could be any less like Parvati. Yeah. I think they're almost polar opposites.
She slept with Roddy on within the first week, and then was in Eric's bed the next week.
Right, but that doesn't have any impact on her game. As far as the way that they play, they're completely different players.
Okay.
That's not a flirt. She was horny.
I mean, in terms of personality. I'm sorry if I've offended your sensibilities. It breaks my heart that you misunderstand me.
It was a good try. Nice try to sneak it through there.
Okay. Let's talk about Danielle. So, Colin, do you want to open the discussion on her?
Sure. Danielle is probably considered like the biggest, I'll say it, still considered the biggest robbery in Big Brother history. Is that a historically accurate statement still?
Certainly the best player to never win.
Oh, okay. I see how we're going to do things here.
We're putting out there right now, are we?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah, we are. We absolutely are.
Okay. Well, Danielle is someone who in Big Brother 3 played the entire game without ever once being nominated. And, again, this is basically pre-veto, although there were a couple exceptions. But it's still a hell of an accomplishment. She made it, I think, 10 rounds and then just didn't win the final HOH but still managed to get taken. And this is, like we've gone over, she ended up losing the jury vote. Now, one of the things – I think this is going to sound like grasping at straws as a way to criticize Danielle Reyes, but I feel like it's a valid criticism, which is she knew the jury was going to get to watch those tapes. So how do I – like, I don't think any of us are going to sit here and say Danielle is anything other than a very, top-tier player. But I feel like that's at least something that goes widely unrecognized, and the reaction is always, oh, well, she got screwed, instead of really looking at how or why. Because I basically, and it sounds like patronizing really is the right word for it, but when you know that that's going to be the format, I think you have to, as you vote everyone out, say in the diary room, oh, yeah, they were just too big of a threat.
Yeah, so I'll go ahead and make a counterpoint to this because I've heard this argument before. This season aired, 2002, summer of 2002, so this was still extremely early on in Big Brother and Survivor, just brand new out of the gate. I don't believe we had actually had a quote-unquote bitter jury yet. Am I correct in making that statement?
Well, when Will wins two, Big Brother 2.
You're counting that as a bitter jury?
No. I'm saying that's an example of them not being bitter.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I agree. So what I'm saying is I think Danielle went into this thinking, people are going to see that I'm playing this cutthroat game, that I'm willing to oust anybody at any time and be not a dirty player, but I'm willing to do whatever it takes to get there, and they're going to respect that. And this was really kind of the first time in reality TV history that we saw someone I don't want to say lost to a bitter jury, but lost to jury members that were upset with her because of the way she conducted herself in the diary room. So I think she thought she was going to get respect for what she was doing, and it just totally blew up in her face.
Yeah, although I don't think you need to have – I think it's a fairly basic thing about human psychology that people are going to get pissed off and butthurt in games like this. I don't think you need to have seen that come into play beforehand to reasonably expect that.
That's true, but I think the things that she was penalized for people being angry at, they weren't really that bad. I mean, if you go back and look at what she did, there was really nothing in there aside from Roddy being the devil or whatever the quote was. There's nothing that she said that was really that outlandish or that rude. It was really just, her playing this icy game and counting down in the diary room, 3 to go. I don't think there was anything in there that really deserved as much hate as she got from her jury.
I agree, but, okay, let's say that the jury was sequestered and they didn't get to see the DRs as in every other season. And suppose, rather, that Danielle wins the final HOH, evicts Lisa, takes Jason. She probably loses in a 7-3, 8-2 vote, and I imagine that's a ceiling on how many votes she gets. We wouldn't have any reason to complain about the jury seeing her DRs or whatever, but I don't think anyone would complain about her losing, necessarily, or at least not for the same reasons.
That's true, but I don't think she would have taken Jason.
You don't?
No, I don't.
I mean, she was saying this to the cameras when she had no reason to lie, as far as I can tell.
I get that, and I just feel like, I mean, if you're in that situation, how would she, I mean, she's a smart woman, I think we can all agree, she's very intelligent.
Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that she would have chosen the, you know, good Christian boy who never wronged anybody over Lisa, who she could paint as sort of the passive third wheel. I think even though she was saying that at the time, I think it's similar to kind of what we saw this season where the person in the final three might not necessarily take their closest ally. They might change their minds near the end of the game.
The other thing that makes me think that, though, is in Big Brother All-Stars when Danielle asked Boogie her jury question about how she told him that he was her Jason or whatever, as if that still meant a lot to her. I don't think she necessarily would do that if she didn't sincerely think at that time that she was going to take Jason.
You might be right. I don't even remember the Boogie question, to be honest with you. If she really does end up winning that and taking Jason, that would knock her down huge in my book, because Jason's the exact kind of guy you never want to take to the end. But I don't know. I guess I have some blind faith that someone that smart and that skilled at the game would end up making the correct decision in the final three.
Okay. I mean, we could probably clear it up if we just ask on Twitter or something, but I don't know. They're far too lazy to do that. So,
I'm curious about how you think her performance in All-Stars affects her legacy.
I don't think it affects it that much. I think she obviously didn't play a spectacular game or anything like that, but I don't think she was necessarily terrible. She made it deep into the game. I think she thought she was going to run to the end with the two guys. She got misted like everybody else. Granted, you know, it definitely does knock her down a tiny bit, but I don't think it impacts her in a big way.
Okay.
I think her performance in All-Stars, especially being outplayed by Chilltown, knocks it out of that elite tier. Although I still think at that time, when she was missed by them, if you want to call them that, she was in a fantastic position to win the game had they not outplayed her. Like, Erica was in her pocket, Chicken George was in her pocket. I think she still had Janelle as a target for everyone else in the house to go after. And once the dust clears, I think she would have been in a great position to take it down from there. The fact that she wasn't able to close, though, I think does speak volumes about, like, the way in which her gameplay changed between Big Brother 3 and Big Brother All-Stars. So I think it does knock it down, but I don't think it knocks it down a great deal.
Yeah, I think when Erica is HOH there, if you're Danriel Reyes, there's no excuse for you to ever leave.
Yeah.
Unless you were just, unless Will Kirby is just that good, which he is.
And to her credit, she was the first one to eventually realize that Chilltown had to be broken up, although that was only at the final six, which was far too late anyway. Like, all of them deserve to be penalized for that. I think that's all we have to say about her. I think
she's extremely impressive player, generally speaking, and the end game is certainly one that is questionable. Given the way it was going to work and the way she had been in her diary rooms, do we think she could, like, do we, does she even definitely beat Amy? Did it even really matter? That's probably extreme.
She definitely destroys Amy.
One other thing, though, is We laud her achievement in Big Brother 3 of never being nominated, and correctly, because that's a fantastic thing to have on your resume. At the same time, though, we also never got to see her under pressure in Big Brother 3, and so when she was nominated by Erica in All-Stars, that was the first time we really get to see her when her back's up against the wall, and she came out of that very poorly, like literally having a mental breakdown.
That's true, but if she's never putting herself in a position where she can be up, that by itself is a skill.
Correct.
So I think the fact that she's staying off the block sort of negates whatever negative thing you're going to count for her for when she panics when she's on the block.
Okay.
Now, one of the things that I like, and it's, again, I feel like I'm being overly critical of, like I'm not conveying how much respect I have for her as a player, which is a very large amount. I feel like she has an irrational fear of the block, because I think when you're someone who is such a social animal who probably has good relationships with other people, there are going to be times, I think, in the end game where you don't necessarily want to even be working that hard to keep yourself up, where you're not going to be the one who goes if you're even up against pretty much against any other person, and then you protect yourself from having to vote between two people perhaps you've got deals with. Like,
it's true, but
I just feel like she I feel like she would always say, I would rather, like, under no circumstances would I ever want to be on the block, and I just don't think that's a principle that I agree with. And I guess that's just one area, if I'm nitpicking her game, that I would take issue with.
Well, not to keep comparing her back to Dan, which is a bit unfair, but I think the point is good that both Danielle and Dan in their second time playing were afraid of being on the block post-veto, and I think that's a real fear in that I think Danielle came in thinking everyone's going to consider me a huge threat, so the best thing I can do is stay off the block, even if that means maybe, you know, playing less than optimally in some points. I want to make sure that I'm not on the block at all because someone will change their mind and go, this person's too big of a threat. So I don't think she was as scared of the block as you guys are kind of making it sound. I think she just was afraid that if she got up there, something bad was going to happen and it was going to get flipped on her.
I think it's also... Okay, start again. I think it's also worth noting that she effectively self-nominated in week one of All-Stars, where she came up with the plan to have Jason Janelle disagree about nominations so that the two of them go up and they could vote out Janelle. But she handled the dissemination of that plan in pretty much the worst way possible by prevaricating over which side she would go with, and then basically that enabled Jason Janelle to agree on her as one of the nominations.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like I said, I think we all agree she has flaws in her game, certainly. And, I mean, when you guys said it knocks her out of the top tier, as far as I'm concerned, there's only two people in the top tier, and then there's everybody else, so... You know, getting knocked out of that top tier to me isn't really that big of a deal. I think she's certainly one of the better players ever. I think she, you know, she'll obviously crack my top 10. I won't give away where she is, but, you know, for all the weaknesses she has in her game, I think more often than not, you're going to see her have extremely high EV in a random season.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure we're going to be, when we get to our top 10 overall list, we're going to be talking more about Danielle Reyes. Spoiler alert. Now let's talk about Danielle's very close ally and Dom's boyfriend, that being Jason Guy. So Dom, this is a guy, this is someone who, you've been trying to convince me for a while now, is this elite mastermind player. So the floor is yours now to tell me why I should be a believer in Jason Guy.
Okay, I don't think he's any kind of active mastermind, but in some way I think that makes his achievements all the more impressive. Like, everything positive you can say about Danielle up to the final two applies even more so to Jason. Like, he made throughout the game without being nominated, he had every single person in the house in love with him. I think you can argue that he had, well, it's definitely that he had one of the best social games of all time. You could maybe even argue that his was the best. And he destroys pretty much anybody in a jury vote, and yet he was brought by everyone was willing to bring him within a touch of the final three. Danielle, I mean, we can disagree about her true intentions, but from what she said, she was willing to take him and lose to him. Like, his hold over her socially was that good. And aside from, like, the possible flaw of not running out Amy at the of not running out Lisa at the final four, like, if he does that and he goes to the final two and wins, I think he is one of the best winners of all time and rivals Dan's game in Big Brother 10.
Okay, that's a strong statement. I don't agree with that, but I do agree with your general point. I think Jason is super underrated and gets overlooked by most people, including Colin. I think he's a really excellent player that is just built for a game like this, less so for Survivor, because in Survivor people will take out these super nice people. Big Brother, they seem to get carried farther than they should. I think Jason's a really, really strong player and certainly in contention for the top 10 list as well.
This is lunacy to me, and I'll tell you why, and this is why I take issue with it. And Jason would certainly be in my top 10, probably just, expected value. But which, again, we don't need to get into, like, the differences between that and whatever. He will not be on my top 10 list when we get to that. And that is because I don't feel like he's doing a very high percentage of this on purpose, which I think in his season is fine when Danielle is actively trying to take him to the end. But in a general season, he's not always going to have that. And I think he will always go as far as being the nice guy in a given season will let him go, which in this case was quite far. But in many cases, it's not going to be that far. And I know he is, I will never, ever doubt, I will not deny, he is a social game, one of the best ever. And if he goes on and wins that game is, I don't know where anyone's making deductions, much like Dan's game in Big Brother 10. If Jason goes on to win, if Danielle wins and takes him and then he beats her, that's just a ridiculous game that I don't know where people are going to be deducting points from. But that being said, I can't give him that much credit because I don't think it was that much of a conscious effort.
Okay.
I think he had a lot of it explained to him, and he understood when it was explained, but I don't think he does it on his own.
Yeah. I mean, his willingness to backstab Marcellus, I think, shows that he wasn't just being led around on a leash by Danielle at all.
How does that not show that he was just, like, I feel like that's a great example of how he was just being led around on a leash.
Right, but it's not like he had some moral compass that prevented him from doing the strategically correct move.
No, it was he was that far in Danielle's back pocket because he's a not gullible, but he's a player who is willing to bend to an elite player's will.
Right, but it's so far in her pocket that she was willing to take him to the end and lose to him, potentially.
Right, and but I mean, we just covered that, and that's something we take issue with Danielle for.
Okay, sure, but I think you have to praise Jason an equal amount. Or, well, okay, not an equal amount necessarily, but, you know.
I also think, I think Colin has a way of separating the gameplay from the game skill, or whatever we want to call it, where Jason is certainly more game skilled, just a natural social player, probably doesn't understand the game quite as well, but I think you have to sort of combine those in Big Brother, because at the end of the day, just that basic social aspect is a huge part of the game. So I think, yeah, he may be very naive on the strategy and stuff like that, but he's intelligent enough to pick it up as he goes along. I think he's someone that would do very well in a random season, even without a Daniel Reyes coaching him along, just because I think he's someone that people gravitate towards.
I think he's a lot like Shane from this season. I think, he's better than Shane, but he is a lot like Shane, which is, he'll get it, and he'll piece it together, and he's a much better version of Shane. Let me be clear. I'm not saying they're in the same ballpark at all, but they're the same type of player, I think, which is people are always going to really like them. It's going to be impossible to beat them in the finals, and it's going to be pretty hard to take them out if they get some really solid allies in the end game.
Right,
But I don't think it's just nearly on the, like, this is even in the conversation as a player.
But none of those things you just said are true of Shane. Right. I think if
come on.
Shane didn't have people following him around, like he was the Pied Piper, just willing to lose to him. Like, if Jason wins that season, it's a clinical domination, it's a slow death march to the finals of Jason just bulldozing everyone in his path. If Shane wins, it's, you know, we remember him in the same terms as we might do someone like Fabio, where they're just not really aware of what's going on, and they're well-liked enough to win, but not well-liked on their own merits. It's like, I don't think that's a valid comparison at all. I think if we're going to get into the habit of making these comparisons, I think the best one would be, like, Jason's a supercharged version of Ethan.
Think that one makes much more sense. I don't agree with the Shane comparison either. I think, I mean, how many times did we hear Shane say, my social game sucks? I don't think Shane was anywhere near as charismatic as Jason is, but I think Ethan is a really excellent comparison.
I will accept that. I will definitely take that. Now, but I think the idea is the same, which is that if Danielle wins that final HOH, takes Jason and loses to Jason, I would never watch that season and say, oh my god, Jason just bulldozed everyone. I would say Danielle bulldozed everyone and Jason reaped the benefits.
But like, you can't just say she bulldozed everyone for like 74 days, or I guess the equivalent would be 38 days in Survivor, and then just fell at the last hurdle, because you have to evaluate it all holistically. Like, if her whole end game is set up so that she loses to Jason, then that's a flaw in that acceptance of her game as well.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
Okay.
But regardless of the merit of her actual end game itself, she was doing what she thought was, not so much what she thought was best, but she had a goal that she was setting out to accomplish, and she systematically did that. And I feel like Jason was just the goal, and good on Jason for convincing, not convincing her. I don't think it was a deliberate effort. He was just being himself, and she really liked him and wanted to take him to the end, which is fine. And he gave, like, that's an extremely valuable skill to have in Big Brother. I'm just not willing to give it the same degree of credit I give the more thinking players.
Yeah, this is a distinction that Matt Hoffman brought up when we interviewed him, where I think a lot of people kind of get it wrong when they say someone like Jason has a great social game, even though I just said that earlier. I just want to clarify this. I think Jason is excellent socially, probably one of the best ever, but he's not playing a social game. Like, he's not forging relationships with people with the explicit intention of manipulating them because of those. But he just naturally, like, people treat him like he's Jesus, and that's something which comes naturally to him, but he's not using that to cultivate any kind of strategic benefit.
Yeah, I agree. This is one of my nitpicks that people will always say, you know, so-and-so had a great social game. I always say there's a huge difference between being likable and having a good social game. Likeability is something that Jason absolutely has and that people are drawn to him. But the social game is him influencing other people and, you know, having them make decisions that improve Jason's game. His was, I think, mediocre, maybe even a little better than that, and it was helped by being with Danielle. But I think more what we're focusing on is his just general likability, which is a huge key in Big Brother.
Yeah, that's what I think separates a player like Jason from Dan, where both of them excellent socially, and you can compare them in that respect, but Dan is playing a social game, and Jason is just a very likable guy.
Dan is making a conscious effort, I would say.
Okay.
And I just want to say, I think it's absolutely fantastic that we spent 30 minutes talking about a show that was on 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, let's...
Gotta love it.
Let's stop doing that. Let's move on to Big Brother 4 now, and the winner of that is June Song. So who wants to open the floor with this one?
I love June Song. I'll get it right out there right now. I am a big, big fan of June Song. I am very curious to see what you guys have to say, because I think from start to finish, quite honestly, I'm trying to figure out a good way to phrase this. She was, and I'm not trying to give her points for being herself, but within the realm of, like, she never had to stray too far and do weird things to get good things to happen to her, in the sense of she didn't have to make giant plays. She got things to happen to her because of, like, her natural gameplay. I think she's one of the best natural game players, and I don't know, I'm sure I just phrased that horrifically, so someone else, please cut me off. Koss, what do you have to say about June?
June's a confusing one for me because Big Brother 4 was the last season of Big Brother I ever watched for the first time. It was the last one I caught up on, and I didn't get it. I watched the whole season, and I remember thinking that I thought Allison was more skilled than June, and neither of them were really all that good at all. I came away from the entire season thinking this is a group of like totally mediocre players, and June somehow came out on top. And then I, you know, heard all these people praising June. I don't see it. I haven't seen it. I think she's, you know, very mediocre, good floater, good at, like, jumping from one side to the other. But I didn't see anything in there that really stood out to me. So I'm hoping you guys can convince me because it seems like everyone in the world is telling me June Song is an excellent player, and I'm just having trouble seeing it.
I'll leave the convincing to Colin because up until this morning, I would have been in complete agreement with Colin, like, with the argument that she played, like, a great under-the-radar game. And the thing with Big Brother is, I think it's harder to evaluate people's games because the kind of under-the-radar gameplay is, I think, often correct in Big Brother, and it's a strategy that most people employ. So it's hard to differentiate between the people who are doing it just because they know no other way to play and their number just hasn't come up yet, and those who have their finger on the pulse of the house and are doing it as a conscious strategy. I think June is like the tech, like June wrote the manual on how to play as a floater, I think, if you're going to play that kind of game. But there are decisions that she made and just aspects of her personality in general that make me think she's not as great a player as a lot of people seem to think she is.
Do you want to go into a couple of those, if you have any specifics?
Well, the one decision that typifies everything that's wrong with June's game for me is evicting G at Final Five, where G and June had a secret alliance. He probably would have been loyal to her. And when she explained her decision in the diary room, where she had no incentive to lie, it came across as a very emotional decision, like, oh, well, I've just strung this guy along for as long as I can, and now I'm bored with him and just get rid of him. Where, like, she let Eric and Robert as a pair come into the Final Four, where if the competitions don't break the way they want, then June probably goes out in third, I think, or at least loses in the Final Two. So she was willing to make a risky decision seemingly just based on emotions and not on, like, rational strategy.
If we look at how that game ends up playing out, though, when G goes, I think she makes the finals a giant percentage of the time. Because at that point, I think at that point, it's been house against Robert.
Well, no, because the thing is, Erica knew that Robert would take her and that she would beat Robert. So if Erica wins at that point, I think she probably ends up evicting Allison.
Erica, no, my point is June never goes in fourth place no matter how the competitions break. I don't think.
Right, but she goes in third place a lot, which is the whole point of bashing her endgame.
Well, if she's there with exactly, I don't know. I feel like.
She's in the Final Four with Robert, Erica, and Allison. So if things don't break their way, then Allison always goes out fourth and June always goes out third.
Or rather, like, because when the Final Three is Erica, June, and Robert, then both of those would beat her, so she's drawing dead at that point. And Erica might take her, but Robert certainly doesn't.
Well, Robert and G had literally been close since the day, the minute they walked into that door. I have a hard time imagining that June doesn't feel like Robert's going to be in G's ear the same way he's been, leading the Three Stooges the entire time.
I agree. So you evade Robert. And that's not... She was in a position to do that, and she just didn't. Oh. And that's a very obvious call to me.
Is that... Well, okay. It's been a while since I've watched Big Brother 4. However, I will say this about June. I am much higher, apparently, on her than you guys are. This final five decision, setting that aside, I was not fully cognizant of that when making these assessments, I will say. However, I think June has a hard time pretty much ever getting evicted from Big Brother or ever being in a position where many people in the house aren't actively comfortable and wanting to talk to her. And I think that is a monstrous quality in a Big Brother player.
And I'm going to say that's a very results-oriented way to look at it, because I think there's a lot of players who play similar to June that have gone out in that third, fourth, fifth spot quite often. I think June benefited heavily from the way things worked out in the Final Four, and that the person she wanted to take to the Final Two was beasting POVs left and right.
Yeah, I also think that June is not someone who is naturally likable. Maybe she just got a very good table draw with her cast, and she probably had to be at the Final Two with specifically Allison in order to even have a shot. I don't think she beats either Erica or Robert. I don't think she beats G. She certainly doesn't beat Jack. So, you know, if you go back that far, she had to be there in exactly that combination of people to even have a shot at winning, which, you know, she managed to do it. So, yeah, well done, June. But that doesn't speak well to her game, I don't think.
All right, I apparently am misted by June to a much more severe degree than you two are. I've always been, I don't know, I just don't see what you would have. It seems like most weeks, regardless of who was in power when watching Big Brother 4, they would always talk to June and be in June's ear and hear what she thought. And she was always, I think she had much greater, if you watch that season back, seemed to me to have a tremendous amount of influence over that, over how pretty much every round ended up playing out without ever being basically at any kind of risk to go. I think she was nominated twice and was never going to go either time.
But the point isn't to simply stay off the block or not be a target early on. The point is to get to the end game and then navigate your way through it. And I think she got very lucky and sort of hit perfect to get to that end game with Allison.
Okay, I think I would say more the point is to be able to have people comfortable with listening to you, which I think she did masterfully in Big Brother 4.
Do you think she's an overly likable person or someone that people are going to gravitate to in a normal season? I realize you think that happened in Big Brother 4, but do you think that would happen with a random cast?
I think June is kind of I think she is a hater on a lot of things, but I also think that as a result of those kinds of people, when they then do give you any kind of positive feedback, it means a lot more. And I think June is someone who's she's open with what she thinks. She's certainly not going to pull punches or whatever. She was a bitch to G for a long time. She was catty with certain people in the diary room. But I still feel like people at the end of the day are going to say, I still like June. She at least comes across honestly. She comes across as intelligent. She comes across as someone who clearly, I think she gives off kind of an off-putting vibe that people want to then like her and have her like them, basically.
Well, I get half of that because she does give me the off-putting vibe, but I don't get the second half of it.
All right. Well, I don't know. I guess I'm now questioning my own existence at this point with all of this June hate.
Good. If Cos and I can successfully double-team you for another 2 hours, then I'm perfectly fine with that.
Oh my god, this is going to be brutal.
Okay, if we're going to continue to make these these tenuous comparisons to Survivor players, I think the natural one for June is Sophie Clark.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Oh, I have Sophie as a comparison for someone else. Interesting.
Okay, well, who do you think is the best analog for June?
That's a good question. I would have to think about. I
Yeah, because
she strike. Okay, listen. Okay, I think her general grasp, her hold over people is not to the same degree as this, but is in the style of with Cerie, what she did with Natalie Bolton in Fans vs. Favorites, where it's I think Natalie made moves because she wanted to fit in.
So was the comparison for Natalie Bolton or Suri there?
For the same idea of kind of like making someone else feel like they need to live up to June's expectation would be Suri, where she, like, Natalie, you now, even though it's completely in my best interest, you're now doing this to prove yourself to me that I should like you.
If you're comparing June to Suri, I don't think we can be friends any longer.
Right.
That's maybe the most outlandish comparison I've ever.
As I said, it is not at all to the same degree. It is the same situation. The same. It was the first situation I could think of where it's like not pure. It's like it's not pure pressure. I'm struggling to find the right words. I feel like those more enlightened among our listeners will understand what I'm talking about. Those not so blatantly racist and sexist as these two.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Colin's thought process is, well, they're both fat, they're both minorities, and they're both women, so lock it up.
That's not the case at all. See, that's something that's not racist until you then made it racist, Dom, because you are, that's what we call you, racist Dom. All right. So you guys don't have June. You guys are hating on June. What's the scoop? Where are you? Is just that final five thing is what you're taking such issue with?
Well, like, I think that's the only big flaw in her game, but it's emblematic of everything that's wrong with it.
Also, if you're going to play an under-the-radar game, you can't have flaws like that at the end of the game. That's a huge knock against you. I mean, if you're going to float through, then you need to be able to play extremely well at the end. And if you're botching moves once you get to the end, you're really just getting credit for floating along like 90% of the other people want to do. So I think if you're going to botch the end game, you have to punish her for that.
All right, interesting. Where do you think she falls on your – where does she fall on your list, I would say?
So, you know, coming into this, I had her right there on the same tier with Lisa, sort of interchangeable between 8 and 9. I may actually move Lisa up to 8 and bump June down to 9 at this point.
Yeah, I probably have June around the 7 to 8 mark, probably a bit lower. But, again, we only have 13 winners, and I think some of those are at the bottom by default, and it's difficult to top them, if you like, where top means to be worse than them. So I think June like has a floor of around 8 or 9, and she's probably a bit higher than that.
Oh my god, my head is spinning.
Don't tell us you had her like 3 or something, right?
I don't know how you are finding 8 or 9 people better than her, that have won Big Brother. Or not that have won, but the 8 or 9 games that were better than her of the people who have won Big Brother. I feel like so many of them were not conscious efforts, and I feel like for that alone, you're gonna shake your head. I had her at number 3 coming into this. After revisiting this final five thing, that's certainly gonna be I don't know how to make that into a verb, but I'm gonna put down an asterisk there. She'll get moved down. She'll get moved down, but she's not getting moved down too much. I think she was, in fantastic shape for much, much of Big Brother 4. I had a ton of say of what went on the whole time. I think, and it certainly would do well in many, many Big Brother seasons. I had June at number 3. It's going to go down. I would still have her probably no lower than 5 or 6.
This makes my head explode because I know for a fact that you are a big fan of one of the winners we have coming up, and we both know who number 1 and number 2 are on this list. So for you to have her as the third best winner, you're basically saying she's the best human Big Brother player ever, or at least the best winner ever, and that just absolutely blows my mind.
I am saying of the other people, of the other winners' games, I think she, throughout the course of the game, was always most often in the strongest position. As an active effort that she made herself.
I was going to say, I love how Colin seems to be developing like the podcast equivalent of battered wife syndrome, where Colin and I just make some fantastic arguments and he just like submits to them and just acquiesces.
I'm not submitting. I'm saying she's not going to. I cannot wait till the end of this to hear who you have above her.
Okay. Well, what I say is, I think it's kind of unfair to ask what's wrong with her Big Brother 4 game because I think in Big Brother 4 she played way above expectation.
But that's not the point. I'm making the list of the best games ever played.
So then what specific thing are you pointing to other than people wanting to please her, which I think Dom and I don't really agree with? I just don't see what you're pointing to that puts her ahead of everyone except the two greatest players/games ever.
Perhaps it is me just grossly misremembering Big Brother 4, which I will make a point to rewatch. But I've seen that season many times, and it's one of my favorite seasons. And June is – watch how much time, given, if you want to call June a flirt or whatever, watch how much time she gets on that show for someone who's not controlling things. Like, every episode has five scenes of her talking to other people about the, it's like, the whole strategic aspect of that show is LOL Three Stooges and then June and Allison, and then it's Jack and Erica. Oh, this is a kind of an oddball couple, and they're cute and adorable. So maybe it's just because relative to the cast she was playing against, I feel like she was put in a twist that was not suited at all for her, but she handled it perfectly and got G to, like, to do a complete 180 and be on her side. I don't know. I guess I'm going to re-rank June after watching Big Brother 4 again, but I cannot imagine having her lower than 5 or 6, and I think you guys are. I would urge you to do the same.
Okay. I'm not sure why you would ever want to watch Big Brother 4 again, but...
I like that season. Am I crazy? What?
Yeah, you're crazy.
Why? What's wrong with Big Brother 4?
It is a terrible season. It's one of the worst. There are no good personalities throughout it. I hate the whole G and June thing. I hated Erica. Allison, you know, good TV, I guess, but, you know, iffy. I did not like anything about the season at all, and I will never watch it again.
Yeah.
The
one upside is that Jack seems kind of nice, maybe, and then he leaves, and it turns to shit.
I thought there was plenty going on. I liked it. I liked the Justin, you know, Allison sleeping in everyone else's bed while Justin's right there, G being the king of unintentional comedy. And incidentally, when I was trying to think of, like Koss, when you did the Rob Cesternino over-under Matthew Bonner Felda, I was trying to think of a good one a few months ago for Big Brother, and I came up, I think, with the middlemost Big Brother player of all time might be G. Like, a basic understanding of the game, somewhat decent in competitions, but I feel like it's a good indicator if you can say if someone's over-under G.
That's a good comparison, and the fact that he's, like, one of the two or three most memorable players from the season totally wraps up and explains exactly why it's so bad.
Yeah. I don't actively dislike the season. I just think that there are a lot of other seasons that have been better. Like, I think Big Brother's a good show in general and has produced quite a few good seasons, and that's just not one that happens to be at the top.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to be talking about Allison when we talk about our non-winners. Because it's not much like the Danielle and Jason thing where they were so closely with Lisa. Allison coming up in a little while. Are we good to move on now to Big Brother 5?
Sure.
All right. Now, see, this is a season I would definitely have below Big Brother 4. This is Big Brother 5, and the winner, of course, in question is Drew Daniel. Now, Koss, what do we have to say about Drew? Because this is a very interesting one for me to see where you guys have him.
So Drew, to me, is a fun one because I think he's sort of comparable to Jason, maybe not as naturally likable, but I think he's a very charismatic guy, probably doesn't understand the game super well, but I think just his natural personality is well-suited for a game like this. Also, I love the way that he played with Diane, just basically toyed with her and then cut her throat when he needed to. I actually like Drew. I'm not saying he's a great player, but I think – Big Brother players are generally awful, and someone like Drew is way better than the average player.
Koss is going to make a woman very happy someday.
Someday. All right. So what do we have to say? Because Drew is someone who got it, you know, the Four Horsemen Alliance it formed very quickly, and then they put a giant target on themselves. But Drew was able to, throughout really like the course of the game, stay completely out, like under the radar with no one ever, like, having him within their sights despite winning competitions and being everyone knew he was on great terms with everyone. So, Koss, yeah.
If I can interrupt, I want to make a point there because I don't think he was under the radar at all, and that's what I think makes him a decent player. Is he wasn't under the radar. People just said, well, I should take out Drew, but I like the guy, so I'm not going to. And that's a huge difference from someone who just completely floats under the entire way.
Yeah, I don't mean under the radar in the sense that no one knows they're there. I mean the literal, if you're looking at your radar for targets, Drew is not on it, despite you being aware of where he is. Like,
right.
You know he's there, and you're just not even considering putting him up or voting him out.
And if you were playing rationally, you'd go, man, this guy's a threat to win the game at the end. I need to get him out. But nobody did that because they liked him so much.
Yeah. Yeah, Dom, what do you have to say? What do you think about Drew just getting into it?
Yeah, I find it difficult to care about Drew, really, but there's nothing wrong with the game he played, I don't think. So, I don't know. I generally have nothing more to say about him.
Drew, I think, I would say Drew is is kind of like Ethan, where his just natural personality is going to get him so far in Big Brother. But I don't, again, like I have Drew substantially lower than I had June. Yeah. And that may be a controversial thing. I just don't think much of it was like on purpose for the right reasons.
I think the game that he played was probably more emotional than the games with anyone else we've discussed so far. And so it's just, he played very intuitively, and maybe he's just naturally good enough that that's enough to lead him to the end. But it does show that maybe if he were in a season or in a situation where he did have to fight his way out of things, I'm not sure how well he'd be able to do that.
He actually reminds me a lot of one of the other winners we're going to be talking about. I think they both played a very comparable game. Drew probably a little less skilled just in terms of, kind of like you said, getting out of situations when he should be in trouble, but he was never really in a position to be in trouble in that season, and that obviously helped him get to the end and win.
Yeah, like from the beginning, he was in the Four Horsemen, and through Diane, he had a bridge to the other side of the house, so really no one was ever going to seriously consider nominating him for a while, and that pays off for him because he's not nominated until week 9, I think, which, he's the last one nominated in the season at least. What do you think of his move to evade Holly? Because that's the thing that a lot of people point to, is him just making some boneheaded blunder that happened to not come back to bite him.
Yeah, where they're giving up a free vote for the Four Horsemen.
Cos?
Yeah, it's obviously, it's a terrible decision. I mean, when you look at it that way, it's, you know, Holly's maybe the most impressionable, stupid person they've ever had in the house. So to cut her loose, what was it, week 2? Maybe 3?
Week 3, I think.
Yeah, it's an awful decision. And, I mean, that's, again, kind of what we're saying about it. He's a first-level player. He's not thinking through things like that. And those are the mistakes he's going to make. But at the end of the day, I think he's likable enough that he can kind of get away with that, even though he is occasionally, you know, beating up women or whatever he was doing a couple months ago.
Yeah, for those, kind of a bit of a life update now on Drew for people unaware. A couple months ago, I guess first Drew came out of the closet, and which surprising stuff given his relationship with Diane. Although, we'll leave Shane out of this, I guess. And then recently got arrested on some kind of like assault charge, which I would then just, you know, he's got a twin brother, just blame it on that guy. Hilarious joke. All right, yeah, nailed it.
All right. Yeah, we don't have anything insightful to say about domestic abuse, unfortunately.
Unfortunately,
not why people tune into this podcast.
I do love that you made a identical twin joke in a season that had identical twins.
Well, also, Diane had an identical twin too, and they weren't involved in the game, obviously. But yeah, that was an interesting little met. I always like that on production where when they're like giving out the house keys and everything. Like filming Drew back at home, part in his shot is his twin brother. So then when they reveal the twin twist, I assume it's, is it going to be Drew or Diane who has the twin? And then it's someone whose twin they didn't even show in the opener.
Yeah.
Intriguing. Okay.
Good stuff.
Going back to the Holly thing quickly, I think it's possible that Drew accidentally backed into a good move there because, yes, Holly's impressionable, but not by him as long as someone like Jason is in the house. And I think he realized, maybe not consciously, but subconsciously at least, that the Four Horsemen were kind of done for at that point, and that it would be a great show of loyalty to the other side of the house to evict someone like Holly, where he could retain the loyalty of the other Four Horsemen members in the process.
Well, does that serve to really maintain the loyalty of them?
Well, they didn't want to come after him.
No, but what else? I mean, they have much bigger fish to fry. I don't think that was it not making him their direct target the next week justifies it.
Right, but so what would you have done instead in that case?
Nah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, fair enough.
But I think
I just feel like Drew, it was so much, I don't think he was thinking ahead like at all to until they got like right down to the end game where he was thinking, oh, I got to take one of Diane or Cowboy to the end. I think a lot of his moves were, like we've said, emotional and reactive, and I think he got lucky to wind up making a lot of the right decisions because everyone liked it, which is great for Drew. Everyone ends up liking him and telling him the truth all the time. I just don't think he can always count on a cast being like that. However, I feel like with everyone just kind of bending over backwards and like helping him, handing him the game, really, he took. There were a couple times, I think, where he could have thrown it away.
What I don't understand, though, is you're arguing that these are fluky things that Drew had for his specific season, yet you praise June for having those fluky things in hers. So I don't understand. To me, it looks like Drew is much more charismatic than June is. yet you seem to be giving June much more credit than Drew, and I don't really understand why.
As a Big Brother player, I feel like that's not even close. Like, June is going to be able to recognize the better play and know how to persuade people to get to do that, and Drew is going to hope people tell him the right thing to do, or hope he winds up feeling like the correct move is the right thing to do.
That's fair. I think you're just giving June too much credit, not okay. to go back to that. But I think I agree with you. Drew is a first-level thinker. He's going to not have a deep insight into what everybody's thinking. It's more somebody comes up and tells him something, he reacts. But at the end of the day, I think enough people are just automatically coming up to him to do that it makes him a decent player.
Yeah, I think that Shane is a far more valid comparison for Drew than it would be for Jason.
Oh, I agree. Totally.
Okay, any final thoughts on Drew, either of you?
Mediocre.
Oh, where do you let's give him our rankings. Cost, where do you have him?
Again, I totally agree with both of you guys, but especially Dom on like the top tier, bottom tier, and everybody in the middle. It's a total mess for me. I'm putting Drew at 6, and then when I look at it and go, God, Drew's the 6th best winner the show's ever had, it's kind of embarrassing. But that's where I'm sticking him.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you have him 3 spots higher than June.
Yes.
Wow. All right.
I also have Drew squarely in the middle, and that sums up pretty perfectly. What about you, Colin?
Are you having that 7?
Yeah, around there.
Okay. I have Drew at number 9. He is towards the bottom of the everybody in the middle tier for me.
Okay.
I just feel like there was just no active effort.
Okay, but
honestly, I think 6 to 9 is all pretty much the same. I think we agree that there's really good, there's really bad, and then there's a bunch of just mediocre crap, and he falls into that tier extremely well.
Right.
I think, yeah, 3 through 9 are going to be pretty controversial, but the top 2 and, yeah.
I think that's less cause for pessimism than you're making it out to be, Klaus, because I don't think Drew's game is that bad. And so for him to be at that level when we compare winners, it's not a travesty or anything. Maybe that's just because we've had a smaller sample size with Big Brother, so we never really had too many truly bad winners. Obviously, we had a couple, but you know, not enough to really taint it too much.
I'm thinking of it from the point of view that I have Drew as my 6th best Big Brother winner, and if I compared him to a Survivor player and looked at where I ranked that person, they'd probably be like 15. So it just seems like we've had less quality winners in Big Brother, and like it could just be a sample size thing. But again, he just seems very mediocre to me, and to have only 5 winners be better than him, it was kind of shocking when I put out this list.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
So
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
So, yeah, coming up also from Big Brother 5, when we talk about the other notables, we're going to be talking about Nokomis. But for now, we're going to move on to Big Brother 6 winner. This is Maggie Osburn, I believe I'm saying that correctly. And this is the one who I had as the Sophie Clark of Big Brother. So, Cox, let's get into it. What do you have to say about Maggie?
This is such a weird season. I don't think we'd ever seen one like it, where you just have 2 sides attacking each other, but there's really not a lot in the middle of those 2, and it just kind of is which side is going to kill the other one first, and then who's going to snake through once you get to that end game. I think Maggie, you know, kind of benefited from just being in that major alliance and not being super threatening personality-wise. But she did a good job, I guess, to navigate through the end game, you know, getting there with people that she could beat. And obviously, I don't think she would have had a chance against Janelle, but to get there with Yvette, I think it was a really strong move on her part to get there with somebody who she knew the jury would not like.
Yeah, well, I think if she gets there with anyone but Janelle from the final 5, so going back, including April and Howie, I think she smashes them. And I think they all, with the exception of Howie, I think they all take her. I think April takes her over Yvette. I think Yvette takes her over April, and they both take her over Janelle.
Yeah, and that speaks to the way that she positioned herself so well in that alliance. But again, I think this is not something that's going to happen every time she plays. I think she got really lucky that there happened to be a 2-sides thing, and she was just sort of the least threatening person in her side.
Yeah, and that's why I said maybe the specific example of her drawing her and Sophie Clark is not spot on, although I do kind of like it. But this reminded me, this season was kind of like Savai against Upolu, where Maggie strikes me as the type who she'll stick with the alliance because it was good for her. Like we said, it sets her up for a lot of good end games. But I feel like Maggie could have easily, and this is not talking about specifically her season, but some kind of like what ifs. I feel like she could have been an extremely capable player if things had needed to go differently, first of all, which I think is a pretty fair statement. And I think the number one reason for that is she always really seems to keep her composure to me and stay collected and stay thinking and keep an image that people feel like they can talk to her, which and maybe that's just something that I overvalue when looking at players for maybe the same reasons as like June. But this is something that I think is just paramount in Big Brother, and I think she's always that kind of player. Where she's not going to get ruffled and people are going to be comfortable talking to her and she's going to be thinking about things correctly and acting on them actively. Do we agree or disagree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I'm kind of interested to see if Dom has a strong feeling on her one way or another, because to me she just comes across as very mediocre.
Yeah, I mean, I think she played her season very well, but I think with the way that those dynamics were set up, where there was a clear divide between the two sides of the house, I think that was very conducive to someone like her winning, where she didn't really need to develop very strong relationships with the people on the other side of the house. All she needed to do was be slightly more likable with than whoever she was sitting there with, and it happened to be Yvette. And that's helped by the fact that none of the other people in her alliance were particularly likable to begin with. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think on an average season, she doesn't do as well. Like, there were no clear mistakes in the game, and there were parts of it which were very impressive. Like, getting Harry to nominate two of his own allies, which is, I think was really the turning point in that season, for instance. Although it's Harry, so, you know. But, I don't know. Like, the fact that there was this divide between the friendship and the Sovereign Six meant that she didn't really have to do a lot of the work, like, dividing people. Like, so, like grudges arose naturally. There's no hatred towards floaters or anything, so she was able to just sit back, go on the radar, and then when it came to the end game, just make a few moves and lock up the money.
See, I feel like she would do just fine in a situation where the lines were more blurred than they were, because again, this was a unique season where the friendship against the Sovereign Six was like just the only driving political force the entire time. That was all. It was which side won HOH, who won veto, and then take out someone from the other side. And then, you know, Janelle just keeps banging off vetoes, and we've all seen the season. I feel like Maggie is a hell of a player, and Maggie, I'm now going to be moving above June, I think, just thinking back now, and I am, June, I will admit, I just completely, if I can, again, just defend myself, based on that final five thing, Maggie is going to go above June on my list, although I still think June's a hell of a player, and again, I will point out, draw another comparison to someone who people able to compartmentalize will realize is a decent example, that being Sarit Fields again, which is I feel like she's good at keeping the lines of communication open, and I do not mean that she is as good of a player at Big Brother as Sarit is at Survivor.
Thank God.
Yeah. But I feel like that is such a critical thing, is having people being willing to talk to you and actually share information with you and feel like they can accomplish something in a conversation with you within those games. And I think Maggie is always going to be that type.
It's a good comparison. I just feel like, again, maybe this isn't totally fair, but I could totally see her being like a Sharon from Big Brother 9 if she had been put in a different cast. Like somebody who just doesn't really do anything, just sort of sits there the whole time and isn't a huge influence in the game. I just feel like Maggie really benefited from her table draw and that there were two concrete sides and she just happened to be on the one that came out victorious. She's iffy for me, and again, you know, she's higher on my list of winners games simply because there's not many good games to pick from. But I feel like she really benefited heavily from the people she was playing the game with from day one.
Do you have any places specifically or any areas in the game at which you feel like you're deducting points on her for?
I just don't think she's as charismatic or likable as you do. And sort of, you know, when I hear you say you're putting her at, I'm guessing is 3 overall, seems crazy to me just because I feel like in many seasons she's going to be overshadowed by somebody else who has those traits, only has them, in a much bigger way. I just feel like there are many seasons where she could get totally lost and just be like the, you know, 6th or 7th person evicted and no one would ever remember her.
Okay, yeah. Now, I've officially come to a decision. June is going to move down to number 6, which means, spoiler alert, Maggie and a couple other people are going to be moving up. Because of that final five thing again, and that will be the final mention of me being a moron about, not being a moron, but being high on June. Shut up, Tom. Too high on June. But anyway, so Maggie's going to be moving up on my list now. I think Maggie is a crazy capable player, and I think she is I think she's always going to be around in the game for a long time, which, of course, is because she's not overly threatening. Like, she's not going to be the type who can win any kind of physical competition whenever she needs to. But I would say, like, she's also then not going to be a threat to win competitions, which is why she's going to be kept around for a while. And I think with that and her personality, that's going to mean good things for her quite often in Big Brother.
Okay. I think you spent far too much time talking about Maggie already.
All right. Where do you guys have Maggie on your list?
I don't know. 8 or 9-ish? Maybe slightly higher?
Yeah, I've got her 7, which I think I've now named 6, 7, 8, and 9, and they're all basically the same to me. So put her as high as 6, low as 9, doesn't really matter to me.
All right, I've got her now at number 5.
Okay. I think we both agree me and Cos that's too high, but I'm not going to fault you too much for that.
All right, so I think that's good for now, at least on Maggie. Maybe we'll see her in our top 10 list. Maybe we won't. We don't know. Top 10 overall list. The suspense is killing me. We'll find out at the end of the show. But we move on now to someone I know the conversation is going to be great about, and that is our Big Brother All-Stars winner. Daddy's home. It's Mike Boogie. Cos, what do we have to say about Mike?
I was kind of iffy on Mike coming into – I'm not going to say Mike. How about we go with Boogie? I was iffy on Boogie coming into Big Brother 14. Obviously, he played a great game in Big Brother 7. Him and Will just absolutely crushed the house, as we both know. Just made their way through it like it was super easy, and then he played the end game extremely well. I was still iffy on him just because I was worried it was Will, but after seeing Big Brother 14 and how easy it was for him to influence people in the house, I think Boogie is absolutely an excellent player and certainly belongs in the discussion for the top 10 all time.
Okay, that's interesting. My opinion of him dropped pretty significantly after Big Brother 14. I thought the way he ostracized himself from the rest of the house was frank. And just the way he played the game in general. Obviously, he showed flashes of the same genius that he displayed in Big Brother 7 with Raw, where, like, convincing Danielle to vote out Janelle, for instance. Yes, okay. But other than that, it's... I don't know. Maybe that was just forced upon him, that situation, by his reputation coming out of Big Brother All-Stars. Like, it's certainly possible he just had no equity coming into Big Brother 14 to begin with. But I wasn't impressed by his performance this time around.
Well, I think it just showed that even when he's disliked or a huge threat to other people, he's able to influence them. So even though he didn't even end up making the jury, what I saw at least, and I think what Colin's going to tell us, is that the way he was able to influence other people into making his decisions, even if it was only for 1 or 2 weeks, was pretty impressive. I mean, he's a guy who's going to always play the I have one friend and we're going to bowl over everybody type of strategy, but he does it pretty well.
He is the guy who plays the game that I am floored every single time people are talking about deals and about these kind of like, I'll take you, you know, no matter what, we're going to be good through the final four. No matter what, we're going to be good through the final six, whatever. Quack Pack, no matter, Ian's saying when they're forming the Quack Pack, unless there are no other options, no matter what. I'm much more of the opinion that the approach to take is, regardless of what's been happening, listen, this is why it would be good for you and I to be working together for this round and probably for a little while in the future, because I feel like that's really how this game is played in terms of what you can rely upon in a player. And I see Mike Boogie, what I see in Mike Boogie is someone who is a master of that, of giving other people incentive to keep him and certainly in All-Stars, he and Will around. And I think, certainly in Big Brother 7, which is the game we're talking about now, that collective body of work between Chilltown is just fucking ridiculous what they were able to get people to do. And I think, you know, Will gets a lot of credit about for that, for, you know, Boogie becoming such a great player, which we're about to be talking about. We'll talk about, you know, how much influence and how much credit Dr. Will necessarily deserves. But I think Boogie is a hell of a player anyway, and I think Big Brother 14 only served, at least in my mind, to solidify that.
Yeah, I mean, as both of you said, coming out of All-Stars, there's always this open question about how much of what they did was Will and how much of it was them as a unit. Because we've seen Mike and Will, we've seen Will without Mike, and we only saw a small snippet at the end of Big Brother All-Stars of Mike without Will. But I think seeing Boogie play on his own this season has shown that without someone like Will there to not necessarily guide him, because he's capable of playing as an independent guy, but without someone there to fill that role, he's not as impressive as All-Stars might have led you to believe.
Okay, well, that's it. Oh, go ahead, Gus.
I think his arrogance is the thing that really hurts him, though, if you're talking about, you know, strictly, like, who is the best player or who belongs in this discussion. The problem I have with Boogie is that he's going to play that side of, you know, I have this alliance, me and one other guy, and we're going to go. But when he's winning, he rubs it in your face, which is not good. And the thing I always hate about when I look at Big Brother 7 again is he goes to throw that the first part of the final three HOH, which is retarded to begin with.
Yes, it is.
He does it, and not only does it, but rubs it in, and is like, hey, Julie Chen, they both have to take me. Why would you say that? Why not just keep your damn mouth shut and let them figure that out? But the fact that he said it out loud basically, you know, got the girls thinking, wait, why are we taking him? I think, you know, that and, you know, kind of what we saw in Big Brother 14, him, you know, jumping off the thing, getting ready to slam the buzzer for the veto win, and he's, like, celebrating and ends up costing the thing. Those are the kind of things that are going to hurt Boogie in this game. He's a showman first and a player second, and that's what ultimately hurts him from being a true top-tier player in my mind.
Yeah, part of Will's greatness, I think, was he was always able to mask his emotions, and Boogie seems to be physically incapable of doing that. I think the thing that best displays that, aside from all the showbreading competitions and stuff, is when he's talking to someone like Brittany or Danielle, who he doesn't respect as a player, particularly if they're female, I'd add, and he seems to not be able to come across as not patronizing. That makes sense?
I don't know about that. I feel like if Big Brother 14... for him to still do what he did in Big Brother 7, and then I know we're not talking about him as a collective player and whatever, I feel like it's a great example of how much influence he can still have, even when people know exactly what he was capable of and exactly what he did in Big Brother 7, with that complete total douchebag swagger and arrogance, and, you know, blowing competitions for himself, to still be able to do what I think are some of the remarkable things he did in Big Brother 14, which again is not the point right now. But still, I think at least serves to show what kind of a truly great player he is in my mind, and one of the best players ever to play, which he's well within my top 10, which would use spoiler alert.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt he's a great player. It's just if you're talking about elevating him any higher, I think you have to look back at Big Brother 7 and say, how much of this credit are we giving to Will? I probably give less credit after Big Brother 14 than I did before it, but I still think at the end of the day it's mostly Will, and that's what hurts Boogie. I think he needs Will there to kind of keep him in check.
Yeah, so where would you place him on your ranking, Koss?
So are we talking about just strictly the winner's ranking overall?
Yeah.
Yeah, so strictly in terms of winner's rankings, I mean, I got it at number 3. I don't know how I feel about that, but I think when you just looked at the collective body of work, if we're going to give credit to somebody, it's going to be a combination of Dr. Will and Boogie. I'm willing to give enough of it to Boogie that I'm going to put this game at number 3, but I don't feel great about it because at the end of the day, I still think it was mostly Will pulling the strings.
What percentage would you assign Will of that influence, or of when Boogie wins? What percentage of the credit does Will get?
So coming into Big Brother 14, I would have said about 90-10 in Will's favor. Now I'm willing to put it at maybe 80-20, even 75-25. But I still think Dr. Will deserves most of the credit for that season.
Okay. Dom, where is he on your list?
I mean, I want to put him high, but I can't justify that to myself. So it seems like, seemingly with everyone else, he's around there in the 5-7 range.
Okay. For me, moving June down from 3-6, Boogie now becomes number 4. Which I think that's about right. I mean, obviously I think that's about right, because I just proclaimed that that's my ranking. But I think he certainly deserves, of the people who have won the game, I think it's pretty inarguable to have him. I don't know how you're going to have more than 3 or 4 people above him at some tops.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you have to handicap it at least a little bit. Even if you're giving credit to Will, I think you have to look at it and say, look at how many good players were in this season. I mean, you know, just totally beasting on Danielle, Janelle, you know, even some of the lesser ones like James, Allison. I think, you know, there were enough rational players in there that Chilltown should have been like 3 or 4, like, they should have both been gone within the first 3 or 4 boots. But the fact that they both made it to the Final Four, you have to at least give Boogie a good amount of credit for that, even if it was mostly Dr. Will, just because they were a team playing together. And I think the competition they were up against is enough for me to put him at number 3 overall.
Yeah, I think Boogie suffers way too much from Like, I think a lot of people give Will too much. I think Boogie is, I guess the point is, way underrated in terms of, what he brings to that partnership, which is, first of all, something of a shield for Dr. Will, at least in terms of he can win these competitions for them. Secondly, I think there's a lot of, Boogie gets, Will gets a lot of the credit, and then Will gets credit for all Boogie has to do is just not mess it up, and the reason Boogie didn't mess it up is because Will kept him in check. And I think that's just taking it too many levels too far. I think Boogie certainly crushed his position in Chilltown in Big Brother 7. I think he had a lot to do with that success. I don't think 90-10 is fair at all. I think it takes a lot to not mess that up, first of all. It takes a active efforts to get out of what are just naturally horrible positions for if they begin to think rationally at all. Chilltown should just be fucked immediately. And I give Mike a lot of credit for that. I feel like Will gets the credit he deserves for sure, but I think Mike does not, as a result of that, Mike gets is too far in Will's shadow, I would say.
So what would you put the percentage at?
70-30. I just feel like 90-10 is just gross and just giving Boogie like nothing. But I will concede certainly that Will is like the one who's coming up with most of these plans and these mind games and stuff for sure. But I think it takes a ton of effort on Boogie's part and a ton of knowing what he's doing. All right. So if we're good to now move on, actually before we move on, are you guys good for now at least on talking about Boogie?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, I'm sure, of course, Chilltown's going to come up as we move on. So I think that's good enough for now. Before we move on to Big Brother 8, I think it is worth making a note that this is this marks a drastic shift in Big Brother as a game and as a show itself. Arnold Shapiro is no longer involved now as we move on to Big Brother 8, and this is where Alison Grotter takes over. And so to speak, this is where we start entering the darkest timeline. And I think it's worth talking a little bit about this transition before we actually get into Evil Dick, who won Big Brother 8, because this is where the big thing to me is, of course, with the Big Brother 8 twist and then things we've seen in subsequent seasons, this is where America's vote and who America is in love with actually starts mattering within the game and mattering to an absurd degree. And Grodner, she gets just in love with this idea that America's favorite needs to have some huge edge within the game, and we've seen it every single season since. Koss, what do we make of this change and how that's going to start affecting things as we're looking at these winners?
Yeah, I hate the change. I think Grodner is terrible for Big Brother. She, may be helping a little bit in the ratings, but the truth is that strictly from a game point of view, she's killing it. I mean, when we're going to talk through a couple of the different scenarios where she's totally botched and completely flipped the game upside down just based on the who America likes, and it's killing the game. So it makes it tough to evaluate. For example, the next person we're going to be talking about is Evil Dick. Obviously he's one of the people who's had a major influence and a big quite frankly, the only reason he won was because America liked him. And so I think you definitely have to penalize some of these winners for those edges that they got.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
It definitely makes it harder for us as people who are trying to evaluate these players and compare them against each other, because there's always going to be an asterisk by people like Evil Dick where you can never really be sure what would have happened had production not intervened in the way that they did. And so you have less of a trove of evidence on which to base any claims you might make about them.
I would say you can never be sure, no, but I think you can be quite sure Evil Dick, if left to his own devices, if Eric's not America's player, I don't believe Evil Dick ever wins that game, which I think comes into play.
Yeah, it's 100% confirmed that Dick does not win that season if Eric isn't bound to that contract he signed.
Yeah. Let's get into Big Brother 8, and this is one, like we mentioned, this is always going to have an asterisk. Evil Dick is, I want to say right off the top, Evil Dick, I think we all understand, is an extraordinarily strong, tactical player, but there are some resounding leaks in his game, I would say, and so this is going to come across probably, for the most part, critical just because of his actions in Big Brother 8, but I think it's very clear to everyone who's seen him play that he knows very much what he's doing, and these were all active efforts, which is certainly worth at least giving some credit for off the top, granted that some of them perhaps not pointed in the right direction towards actually winning the game himself.
Yeah, I think he's a real good tactical player. Like you said, he definitely understands the game and how to sort of manipulate week to week better than just about anybody who's ever played. But he does kind of have the Russell Hantz factor of people don't like Dick. And, you know, he kind of enjoys that in the same way that Russell does. And I think, you know, he benefits heavily from having his own daughter in a season. Now, you can credit him for, you know, oh, they were estranged and he pulled her back. But, I mean, it's his daughter. I think, you know, let's not give him too much credit for roping her back in. The truth is, anytime you come into the house with an ally that's rock solid outside of the house, you're giving someone a pretty unfair advantage.
Well, I would say they were far from allies outside the house. I would be inclined to give Dick credit because she at first certainly did not seem even interested in talking to him. She wouldn't hug him early on. I think that's going to change when they're locked in a house with a bunch of people that as unlikable as the Big Brother 8 cast tended to be. And they, you know, they had nothing but time to talk out their issues and everything. But I know, you know, we all know now Danielle Donato to be a pretty like volatile and not easy person to deal with if she does not care for you, I would say. So in that regard, I give Dick credit, although I don't know, it's not even worth getting into what caused the situation in the first place. But it's certainly worth noting that because he's there with his daughter, and again, this is just yet another reason for this whole season to have an asterisk, I would say, where potentially it would be that kind of literally blood-strong alliance that could form, which is exactly what production wanted to happen, which is what they got. Which, you know, by, of course, it's brilliant on their part, I would say. This whole story was pretty remarkable to watch. But he is always, when he's playing with Danielle, going to sacrifice himself for Danielle, which is why, if we are then ranking him, of course, he's going to be near the bottom. When he's going to such extremes as trying to get the whole house to hate him.
Yeah, that makes it really tough to evaluate, you know, where do you put a guy like Evil Dick? And that's why I was so excited to see him play a second time, and then he left after like 4 days. He's a tough one to rank. I mean, there's so many asterisks with this game that it becomes really difficult for me to put Dick in a specific spot and say, yeah, this is fair for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think his Big Brother 13 time, as short as it was, is actually a good indication of his tactical ability, because within the, well, 6 days he was there, he managed to set up the whole Veterans Alliance that ends up emerging triumphant. And I think, had we seen him stay in the game, we could have seen our first two-time winner, Big Brother.
Yeah, I think he definitely would have won. I mean, obviously, it's really hard to make that claim, but I think he would have obviously been the heavy, heavy favorite to win that season had he stuck around. But, you know, I mean, if we're strictly looking at his Big Brother 8 game and how to evaluate him based mostly on that, it becomes really tough for me. I mean, I feel like I could drop him down heavily, or I feel like I could boost him up because of, you know, just the basic skill and understanding of the game. So do you guys have a specific spot where you're thinking is kind of fair for him?
Based solely on his actions within the game, if that is a straight-up game, I would have him at 13 out of 13 of the winners.
Okay.
When my,
but it's not even close to a straight-up game.
Yeah,
right.
When making my list, I left him unranked because I didn't think it was... I don't think there's a way to fairly incorporate him into that discussion without like making like, certain like ridiculous assumptions about how much the rigging influenced things. Go ahead.
I will point out he did not know that it was not a straight up game at the time. He was doing what he thought was he was going to do. Like he was making an active attempt to do whatever he was trying to do, thinking it was a regular game. Now, because of this relationship with his daughter, unbeknownst to him the whole time, because America fell so in love with seeing that play out, he then had one of the most capable players of all time, I'll say, Eric Stein, forced to then work on his behalf, which he certainly, you know, presumably didn't know about at the time or anything. And I will give him credit, unrelated note, but before I forget, I'll certainly give him credit for as a thinker for coming up with a code with his son for HOH letters. But beyond that, there was really no way when he and his daughter kept banging off competitions that he could lose here, despite what I would say were his own best efforts to lose. Where when he doesn't know there's a twist going on there, I think the way he played it is pretty bad.
Right, but at the same time, the fact that America's Player was in the game set up the training events that led to him being screwed over by America's Player if Eric were able to do what he wanted. Like, so if Eric is playing his own game, then Eric probably doesn't cast all of these wacky votes in the first few weeks. We never have the banner flying over that tips Danielle off to Eric, so she never turns on him, which means Danielle and Dick are never isolated from the rest of the house, so we never get into the spot where it's Dustin up against Dick, and Dick is allowed to go home unless production intervenes in the way that they do. So, I mean, you can speculate that maybe some of that would have happened anyway, but you can't just pretend, you can't say, well, if America's player weren't in the game, then X, and ignore its impact on everything else.
Okay, fair enough. I just think long-term, if Eric's there playing on his own, I'm struggling on how to phrase this. If Eric's there doing his own thing that he actually wants to be doing and not doing what America's making him do, Dick's not going to have a lot of success that season.
Okay. I mean, I can buy that.
I feel like that's a really basic thing to understand, especially when he's always going to be falling on his sword for Danielle. I don't think he ever, ever conceivably wins.
That's fair. Although, I think one thing people often criticize about Dick's game is that he set up an endgame where he had to be there with specifically his daughter, and if he were in the final two with anyone else, he would just lose and it wouldn't even be a contest. But part of that is due to the fact that he was in the situation where he was trying to get himself sent home over his daughter, which you can mark him down for that as a player, but at the same time, that's probably the most understandable situation in which somebody might do that when up on the block against their daughter, and they sincerely think that that person has a higher chance of winning the game than they do.
I want to say what Dick did is, none of us have kids or anything. I would imagine completely understandable, and what most fathers would do in that situation, like any, I imagine most people would always want to like step down and let their kid win instead. I'm not taking like, of course it subtracts from his overall equity, but it's not anything that you can like criticize him for to the same degree that you could about someone just doing it because they like it, like because they like someone else, that they're not someone trying to heal this lifelong relationship that's going to have a major impact on their own life personally.
If we can have like a 10-second question on the side here, do you think that's the reason he left when he went to play the second time? Because we're talking about, him giving his daughter this huge advantage. Do you think that's why he quit the second time around?
At first, I was convinced that that's why he quit. I have heard speculation about other things. I hate that his stance on it is, I'm never going to tell you anything about it. If you want to keep asking, go fuck yourself. I think we definitely should get something a little bit more than that, and that's why for so long I kind of erred on the side of, well, he clearly, I was so far into it that production told him in advance, look, this is going to be what's going to happen, and this is no longer what I think, but that, like, production said, look, just come, people are going to buy live feeds out the ass, and then you can be out of here, and Danielle's going to be in a great position, and she's, if you guys haven't talked in a while, she's hopefully going to, maybe this will help you guys smooth things over. I've heard some speculation that it was like drug withdrawals and who knows what to believe. I have no idea. I have never heard anything confirmed beyond speculation. I don't honestly know what it could be. I don't know what it is. It could still easily be what I've been thinking. It easily could be him trying to help Danielle. I don't know. What I think is, anyone who bought the feeds that year should get some kind of, if he ever plays again, if you have a receipt for buying those feeds, you should get that season's feeds for free, because I think he was 90% of the reason people bought those feeds, and I think they got not even close to what they paid for.
Sure. I mean, I think he's so enamored with the idea of winning Big Brother twice, or at least going deep in the second season and being in the conversation with people like Will and Dan. Although, in his own mind, he obviously thinks he's above them, because that's the kind of person he is. He is that arrogant. But for him to be perceived in that way by the general population is enough of a draw for him to go back, that I don't think he would jeopardize that in the way that he would do by leaving it in such a way that it wasn't entirely voluntary. So I think it has to be something which does generally affect him, like outside the game or something like that.
Well, I'll go on record, and again, I apologize for the sidetrack. I fully think he did it to protect Danielle a second time, just because of what we saw the first time. I think he knows he's going to come back and play a third time now, and people will say, oh, he went 2-for-2 in Big Brother if he wins, as opposed to 2-for-3. I think he absolutely quit for his daughter. But, going back to Big Brother 8 and the whole thing, I think, it's tough to evaluate his game because of that, but I think you have to, like you said, kind of put an asterisk by everything and just if we're evaluating based on overall expectation in a random season, I think he actually does pretty well just because he does understand the game. So when I put these rankings together, you know, that's kind of what I thought with him. I thought, ultimately, what do I think he would do in a random season without his daughter, without America's Player, without all this other crap? If he plays a straight-up, you know, Big Brother 3 game, how does he do? And I think he actually does pretty well.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I think certainly now if he were to play, he's developed that, like, respect and that reputation where he could – I think he's a lock if he, like, makes the finals again against most people. I'd go so far as to say it's like – and so many people are like, how the fuck is Evil Dick back there? I think as a first-time player, I think he is completely incapable of holding his tongue. I don't know that he's got a super high expectation in my mind if he's playing just as himself in a without Danielle, just go entering big says in Big Brother 3 instead of Jerry. I don't think he wins very often, like ever.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he's incapable of the kind of introspection that you need to do to improve as a player. Like, for him, I think his win in Big Brother 8 validates every single decision he made within that game. And whenever anyone even suggests to him that maybe he was helped out by production or by America's Player, he bristles at the thought of that. Like, the thought that might take part of the credit from his win is just uncomfortable to him. And
I don't know how. Yeah, I don't know how he convinced himself of that, but he seems completely, genuinely unaware of he could not lose that game and would not have ever won otherwise. But hey, man, he's got the check and he's at whatever.
And even if he hadn't won, I think he would find a way to convince himself that he was screwed over by factors outside his control. So, yeah. I don't know. I think there's like a ceiling on how good a game he can play just because I think that aspect of his personality, first of all, hurts him within the game. Like, anyone who is at blind to things like that is going to be hurt by that. And secondly, because it stops him from improving. Like, he's not going to be able to reflect on his actions in a way that an all-time great player would.
Yeah, it's here, hey Dick, here is some criticism, and it's met with, this is why you're wrong, now go fuck yourself.
Yeah,
that's like far too often the case.
Alright, so are we ready to move on to Adam Jasinski then?
Oh, hell yeah we are.
Okay, take the floor on this.
Okay, I love Baller, by the way. This is A Baller, this is Adam Jasinski, your winner of Big Brother 9, and I am quite confident, guys, that I'm going to be the highest on Baller out of, certainly out of the three of us, probably out of anyone we know. Very big fan of him. I think he is one of the best kind of underrated, or one of the most underrated people person players we've ever seen, I think. He is fantastic at making connections with people. And again, this is apparently a theme we keep running back to. I think that is something that is just massive in Big Brother. I'm very curious as to, actually, before we get into Baller himself, I loved Big Brother 9 as a season. And maybe it's, I said the same about Big Brother 4. Okay, here comes Koss. Koss, tell me why I'm crazy. What, I feel, start to finish, I feel like Big Brother 9 is so strong.
Wow. Okay, so are we evaluating this from, I like watching Big Brother on TV, or I like Big Brother the game?
Both. I feel like it was compelling throughout. And I'm not saying there was compelling top-level gameplay throughout. I'm saying there was interesting stuff happening throughout with entertaining characters.
Okay, what I'll say is I think it was probably good for TV overall, but this is the single worst gameplay game ever. I mean, you should throw this out. It is embarrassing how bad the play is from beginning to end of this entire season. There's not one decent player in the entire group. Everyone is retarded. It could not have possibly gone any worse than the fact that Adam comes out on top. Means absolutely nothing. He's a terrible winner. He's terrible at this game, just like everyone else he played with. It's almost like they tried to make this season a complete abortion just so people would tune in for the train wreck factor. It's awful.
But be careful not to call them retarded. You have the Autism Foundation breathing down your neck.
Well, I can do it because I'm not employed by them. It's an embarrassing season. I mean, I look at this from a gameplay point of view, and I go, it's like people were almost trying to make the wrong decision, or like production was whispering in their ear and then laughing their asses off in the back going, you know, like, we're watching 12 monkeys play this thing. It's a horrible season.
That is wild to me. I feel like I don't know that you can criticize when you're playing the game in pairs like that. First of all, with the power couple thing, that it's not like there are they're not wrong decisions you can even be making. I'll grant you the couples thing is really stupid, But given that that's the way it was going to go down, I don't know where you're saying people were making stupid game decisions. Do you have any specific stuff or? Because there were certainly, I feel like the characters, first of all, were fantastic on this season. I think they nailed the casting on this season, perhaps better than anyone, better than any other season.
What they did, I really feel like they went for the whole train wreck thing because every single one of these people is insane. I mean, when you look at like Chelsea, James, Baller, Natty, Chatty Natty, I mean, they're all completely insane people. And I will give them credit that rather than like dispersing one of these people through each season for the next 6 years, they just put them all in one house and said, go nuts. And that's why they were like licking whipped cream off each other and having orgies and like, Maddie was hooking up with every girl. Chelsea was hooking up with every girl. I mean, it's a bizarre season. But if you want to look at, like, strictly the gameplay thing that I look at for Adam, I think my favorite part about it is, you know, James gets evicted, and then they say, you know, hey, you can either have the mystery house guest or you can have James. So the vote is 4-3 for James to come back, and Adam votes for James, who he just evicted, to come right back in. So, fine. Okay, maybe he changes. But then, it gets better. Adam is HOH 2 out of the next 3 weeks, and who does he put up both times? James. It makes no sense. It's like he's clicking random buttons. It's embarrassing.
He kept James off the block at Final Six at first.
Which was absurd.
Right, and then he didn't, and then he evicted him.
That's right.
It's like every day Adam woke up and said, you know, I think I'm going to change what I was doing yesterday. He's completely insane.
It's like Adam woke up every day and said, you know what, I think people like me enough, far more than they like anyone else. I don't see how anyone's ever coming after me. You know, when he won that first HOH, he was pissed at himself. He was like, I don't want this. I don't want this free ride to be over. He understood. He was on good terms with everyone because I feel like in his own regular life, that's always been the case for him. He strikes me as a remarkably likable guy. And I don't know that that's even – do you disagree with that right off the bat?
Yeah, I don't see it. He's an all right guy. He wouldn't strike me as being overly likable or overly hateable or whatever you want to call it. He just seems like a normal guy to me. I liked Ryan more than him.
So if he invites you to share some baby food with him, you're turning it down?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I agree that his decisions were questionable at times, but I think he was just so well connected socially with everyone that, for instance, running James back into the house was never realistically going to hurt him because James got on well with him, and James is always going to go after everyone else in his alliance before Adam. Like, Adam is far down on that list.
Right, but then why put up James twice? Not once, but twice.
Because
he knew James would be cool with him. I think he understood James would be cool with him. James understood why he was going up. And then when he kept James. Well, the second time he put James up, first of all, the time he evicted James, he said, I'll keep you off the block in the first place, but Sharon's got to promise not to use it on you, which Sharon did, and which she apparently would have held to, or you have to use. You have to promise not to use it on Sharon. My bad. Yeah. Like if you, James, win it, you may not use it on Sharon, which James agreed to, and apparently would have stuck with. Well, who knows? Because he didn't end up winning, but he knew if Adam said, "Listen, obviously if the veto gets used, I have to put you up," and James was cool with that. He just didn't want. James came to him in the HOH crying, saying, "I just don't want to be a nominee at first." And he said, okay, that's fine, because no matter how any of the competitions play out, that's only going to mean good things for Adam.
Right, but so if he was so tight with James, then why would he let the other three people evict James? If he was that tight, James should have been his full ally. But the fact that he wasn't able to keep him in the game tells me Adam is just randomly doing things for absolutely no reason.
Well, I think James would have been one of his bigger jury concerns, considering the other people he was aligned with. I think the other people he was aligned with, like, it would have been a situation where maybe in a vacuum it's better for him if James stays and is on his side and is there being a target, but that's at the cost of all of his other allies saying, well, why the fuck are we keeping James safe? They then may not even vote to keep, like, if he keeps James off the block, they're going to be nonstop pissed at him. They may not vote off whichever of the replacements he ends up wanting gone, hypothetically, whoever it ends up being. And he could then just put a bigger target on himself than maybe even James. So I think it would be a situation there where keeping James off the block in the first place completely locks up his jury vote for sure, and presumably then Chelsea's. Even if he stays off the block, that's not even that bad for you moving forward because everyone has bigger priorities. James is never going to put you up. and the other ones are always going to be going after James and not you. And then moving forward, there's really like no bad competition results that can happen. And to such an extent, I would say, sorry to just be rambling. I feel like with how final five players left, at least he would, no matter who he was there against, Sheila was taking him. He was going to beat her. Ryan was taking him. He was going to beat him. Sharon, I may have taken Ryan. I don't know who even cares about Sharon, because she wasn't going to let, production was going to let her get there. I think he was put himself in a fantastic spot where he was almost always going to win.
See, I disagree, because the very next week after he evicts James, then Sheila puts Adam on the block. So I don't think he was in as good of an endgame situation as you're making it sound. I think he, you know, was a nominee in the final five or six or whatever that was, and then he just happened to win POV, and from then on, he was in a good position.
But wasn't the plan always to battle Natalie that round, though?
I don't believe it was. Was it?
It was. Well, it also would require then Natalie and Ryan wanting to vote him out, and even if she, like, even if both of them, like, it would require both of them then voting him out over Sharon, and if one of them votes him, if only one of them wants him out, or if Sheila, like, Sheila, if she's the one who wants him out, can't necessarily get them to do that, and if only one of them wants it to happen, they can't necessarily get Sheila to break the tie, because I believe the plan at that round was Natalie, because Natalie, this was the round, that Natalie dropped from the cage, right? And then got called out in front of everyone and said, declared her allegiance to the guys in front of Sheila.
Yeah, I think you're correct on that.
Yeah. I think the point is that someone smarter than Adam could come up with some convoluted chains of reasoning in which all of his decisions make sense. But even if you could do that, then that's not the logic that Adam uses in the moment. Like, he just says, well, I like this person, so I'm going to do X, or, you know, whatever just floats through his mind at a particular time. And so as much as I like the guy, I can't give him too much credit for any of the accidentally good decisions that he might have made, even if they were good.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point. And along with that, I think if you look at the final four HOH as well, which this is another Grodner thing.
This is one of the greatest, yeah.
There is no question in my mind. This is the single worst rig job in the history of reality television. Even worse than the America's Player thing, even worse than the other stuff which we're going to get to here in the next couple seasons. This is embarrassing. I mean, you hear her shuffling the cards. They obviously rig it so Sharon will lose. It's beyond ridiculous. And I think, you know, if Ryan ends up banging that off, you know, there is ultimately a chance that Adam could end up going home there.
How is he going home?
Or, I'm sorry, if Sharon does. Excuse me. If Sharon ends up winning that HOH, and I think there's a decent chance that Adam ends up being the one that Sharon targets.
Ryan and Sheila both vote the other one out, though, I would say.
See, I don't know if that's true, because I would think at least that Ryan probably protects Adam, but I don't think Sheila would. I think, am I crazy to think that she would want the obvious big target out there in Final Four?
Well, hold on. Right at Final Four, Ryan proposed the idea of evicting Sheila, because he was worried that at Final Three, Sheila would take Adam, wasn't he?
He had the secret alliance with Sharon.
Yeah, I thought the idea was, like, what Ryan wanted is, if they take Sharon to the Final Three, then Adam and Ryan are forced to take each other because they know that neither of them can beat Sharon, especially since the other one will be the fourth jury vote for her. And so Adam's going to take him, and then Sharon has a secret alliance with Ryan, which means that now if Sharon happens to win, then at least Ryan locks up 50K.
Right, but so if Sharon wins the Final Four HOH, and then Sharon wins the POV, what are we saying happens there?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, because I think that's the scenario where Adam goes home. And quite frankly, I think Sheila winning, there's a chance he could go home as well. Not that Sheila ever going to win the Final Four POV, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the scenario where Allison Grodner got sick that day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
She couldn't make it to the live show.
So, as entertaining as Baller might be then, I imagine he's not very high on either of your lists?
Oh, I think he's high on Colin's list.
How high do you think he is on my list?
Well, I mean, you dropped June from 3 to, what, 6 already, so I'm going to guess now Baller's going to jump her as well. So I'm going to put Baller at 6.
Baller is at number 8.
Okay, thank God.
Baller is below. I am not a crazy person. I understand a lot. He did some of what he did because he felt bad a couple times. I'm sure it was more emotional than the logic I would like to apply to it. I still think Baller was a hell of a player. I think, you know, we'll obviously, because of, like, legal reasons, never see him play again, any of these guys. But, you know, seriously.
Yeah,
but I think he could have done well if he played again. I think he's just one of the most likable guys, and I think a lot of people are, the hate has gone way too far on Baller, I think.
Yeah, I think Baller, outstanding casting choice. They really knocked out of the park on that one, but yeah, average winner, below average maybe. So, Cos, where does he fit in for you?
I get him at 12.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, that's too low. I think I have him squarely at 8 to 9. Which?
Yeah, and that's exactly. Yeah, I have my 9. Was drip.
I'll put it this way: there are 3 winners which I think should be below him by default, and then one who definitely, by my estimation, should be below him, but everyone else I think is delusional in placing them above. But we'll get onto that later. So we ready to move on to Jordan then.
Yeah, we're gonna be putting off Will and Dan for the end of this, but yeah, let's move on to Jordan.
Okay.
Sure, I can start it for Jordan.
All right, go for it.
Yeah, so this is Big Brother 11 winner Jordan Lloyd. I think she's the youngest person ever to win still. No, they were both 21. Who cares? So Jordan's the big thing that we end up seeing. This is the season where the coup de Jeff ends up happening. Their relationship develops very early on in the season. And I guess the real big question with Jordan, straight, just to get right into it, is how much does this end up tainting her victory for UCAS?
I don't think it even matters. I mean, I used to think it did, but I feel like she would have made the final 3 or 4 no matter what happened, and Jeff would not have been there no matter what happened. So I don't really think it taints it at all.
Oh, wow. That's actually a very sound point that I've not heard many people make.
Well, you don't think the final 5 ends up in some alternate universe being Jesse and all of his minions?
Potentially, but then I think there's obviously the scenario where those people end up attacking each other because, I remember when I was watching Big Brother 11, maybe I was just on crack, but I remember thinking, there's no way Jordan's going to win this game. She's, like, destined for second because nobody respects her. And I would think that some players would at least, you know, think kind of along those lines. Maybe she was too likable to take to the end, but maybe they'd take her to Final 3 or Final 4. So I think she ends up in the Final 4 or 5 no matter what, and then from there, you know, she just kind of sits on a log and hopes the other people attack each other.
I think that's pretty fair to say about Jordan entering pretty much any season, is she's going to go deep, like, all the time. And if there's another group of people that she's deep there with that are going to be going after her, or if she can bang off that are going to be going after each other, or if she can bang off some competitions, she could be in good position to win because she's just socially always going to be really well-liked, too.
Yeah. Now, did her performance in Big Brother 13 change your view, or did it just confirm what you thought already?
Well, she played exactly the same game, and the result was essentially the same. So, yeah, I don't think it changes at all.
Well, that's a disturbing thing. Like, if I think it required exactly that combination of HOH and POV winners for her to go home that round, and if that doesn't happen, I think she wins again.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I don't think the result of her going out fourth makes a difference. I think the basic result of Big Brother 13 is that she got to the end again, and I don't think there's any real change you can make. I don't think her winning twice would have made her a great player in my mind. I think I would have thought exactly what I did after Big Brother 11, is that, you know, she's very naive, doesn't really understand what's going on, but she's super nice, and people are going to vote for her when she gets to the end. But I don't think that makes her a good player.
No, yeah, I love Jordan, by the way. I, like, because of the production interference, I'm inclined to not really get down with Jeff and Jordan, but I think they're always really fun on TV, and I feel like, again, the hate may have gone too far on them because of all this production interference that benefited them. I feel horrible for Jesse Godders, who twice got screwed out of his chance to stay when he would have otherwise, had it not been for some America's twist.
No, because in Big Brother 10, Dan would have voted for Vic Jesse anyway.
Yeah, I
agree. Do we think so?
Yeah, certainly. Yes. And the fact that he got screwed over in 11, which I agree he did, is counterbalanced by the fact that him being given a chance to play again in the first place over tens of more deserving candidates, that didn't sound nearly as dramatic as I thought it would.
But, oh, really? Yeah. Tens?
But, well, not to mention that they totally stack the get back into the game contest in his favor. It's like, yeah, we're going to have these groups. Oh, by the way, Jesse, you're on the athletes team, and we're going to have an athletic competition to see if you can get back in. It's totally ridiculous.
Yeah, you guys are going to do chin-ups.
Yeah, it's like scrambling around to see who we can find as a possible recently for the offer. He's like, oh, let's just bring back Cowboy because we know he's not going to come back. So who really cares? Although,
can you imagine, though, if Cowboy would have come back into the game? Oh, my God.
Well, the final two probably between, like, Cowboy and Jordan would have ended up killing ourselves.
Yeah.
Although I'm disappointed we didn't get to see Brian have a chance to play again.
I agree. That's probably a discussion for another day. But yeah, I think it would have been fun to see him again.
All right. But one thing that really puts Jordan at the bottom of my winner rankings, even leaving aside everything else, is in both of her seasons, she wanted to go to the final two with Jeff, presumably, and Jeff would have just destroyed her in a dream.
Well, I don't think that matters, though, because it's a Robin Amber situation.
You don't?
Well, it also doesn't matter because Jeff is never going to go deep in a game of Big Brother.
That's true.
Okay.
Like, it just can't ever happen. And I feel like I really like Jeff. He seems like one of the, like, this most, like, straight-up guys I've ever seen play. Like, of all the guys they normally cast and certainly of all the characters they bring back a ton of times, he seems like one of, like, the just most normal guys who happens to, seems like he's just kind of stunned by how he became this, you know, Big Brother icon, for lack of a better term, because he seems like Jeff can never not be Jeff when ridiculous things are happening around him that he recognizes ridiculous. It's bad as a player to be pointing it out all the time and be like, what, like, even if it's just like, this is crazy what's happening, what's going on around me here, this is wacky, if it's like a joke, it still kind of makes him stand out, I think. And while I like that as what I would look for in someone whose opinions I would want to be interested in, it's like Roddy to me, I think, from Big Brother 3, where he's just so clearly, like, I can't think of another example. He's so clearly someone who is always going to be a target for so many different reasons that I really don't see anyone ever, I don't feel like he's good enough to make enough people feel like they continue to have a reason to keep him around. Like, ever, in a game of it, because he just seems so, he's like Jason minus the innocence.
Yeah, I agree. He's the type of guy. I mean, he reminds me of, you know, half the people I grew up with. You know, it's like,
yeah,
normal, fairly normal people, but he's such an obvious target that I think he's always going to get clipped before he gets into the final three, final four. So he could play this game 100 times. He's probably never going to win.
Yeah, I think, the thing with Jeff is he is, just, as you both said, a perfectly normal guy. And on Big Brother, they tend to cast people who are, like, just crazy in some way. And so Jeff sticks out from them, but as a normal guy who's not a master manipulator or anything, he's not really well equipped to get himself to, like, shift the target off of his back there. So he's always going to be, like, in the game for a while just because he's, you know, he gets on well with people, people like him, but eventually someone's going to win a competition at the wrong time or whatever, and he's just going to get cut, and there's not much he can do about it.
Yeah, he would be much better suited for Survivor, I would say, if he can get, like, a loyal group of people to follow him. Where majority, instead of with swings of HOH comps, and then still, I don't even know. I don't think he has that, oh my god, I must keep this guy around because he's the nicest guy on the planet vibe that, like, an Ethan has.
Yeah, he can't miss people into thinking that he's Jesus in the same way that
right. People
like that can.
Right, he's not Dan, I think that's what we're saying.
Well, very few people are. Alright, so are we happy to move on to Hayden then? I don't think...
Well, where do you have Jordan?
Like, I have her in the bottom three, along with Rachel and Dick, who I think are the other winners whose victory is attained by rigging. So, I mean, you can argue her placement within that subset, but that especially is for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got her 11. That might be two spots too high. I'm kind of hedging in between, you know, the game she played and just, like, the natural skill she has for the game that she doesn't even realize she has. I could put her, you know, quite a bit higher if we're talking about just strictly, you know, EV in a random season, but I don't think she even realizes why that is, so I gotta put her at 11.
Yeah, I think early on in Big Brother 13, like, say 2 weeks in, I think everyone seemed to agree that Danielle was a massive overdog within the game if she played it correctly, and that no matter what she did, like, even if she did or if she didn't, then Jordan was the second favorite, and that Jordan would be in the game for a long, long time. Like, that was never really in question, I don't think, for anyone.
Apparently not. Jordan, yeah, like you guys, I have her at number 11. I think she is at the top of the bottom. All right, thrilling stuff. So,
yeah, I'm not sure why that's on his head off. Cuz, you're still there.
Yeah, I'm still here. Okay. I'm just laughing right. to myself.
Well, hang on. Well, let's not... Don't lose total sight of Big Brother 11 just yet, because my manest man, Kevin Campbell, is going to be coming up in the other notables discussion. Can't wait for that. Well, for now, yeah.
We're going to look forward to shredding your views on him.
Can't wait. All right, so for now, we move forward to Big Brother 12 winner. This is Hayden Moss. Koss, what do we have to say about Hayden?
I think Hayden is somebody that I either misjudged really early in Big Brother 12 or someone who got incredibly lucky with the table draw they had. I originally thought it was more the former. Now I think it's more the latter. I think he's probably pretty well suited to play this game, likable enough, but not a huge target. Did really well to make the brigade. They obviously got extremely lucky that Brennan and Rachel were there to take the focus off of this secret alliance. Hayden also, you know, I don't like what he did with Kristen, and she kind of became a huge target early on, but as soon as Kristen was gone, it was like smooth sailing for Hayden. I think he's a good player. It's kind of disappointing that I have him fairly high in my winners list. I won't say where yet, but again, I feel like he's a good player who benefits from there not being many other good players in Big Brother.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. When I'm looking at Hayden's game in Big Brother 12, I am seriously struggling to find places to make deductions, quite honestly. I think there was never any point where he was in any kind of jeopardy.
I think the only time you could say he would have been is if the week that Kristen was evicted, had she won POV, I think he would have been in big trouble.
Even with all of the brigade there backing him up and all their parachutes?
I guess I shouldn't say big trouble, but I think he definitely would have been a risk to go home because they presumably would have put up someone else from the brigade in against him. Am I correct in thinking? I mean, well, when you look at who else was around, Rachel's biggest targets would have likely been people from the brigade.
I think they easily could have convinced Rachel to put up someone like, I don't know, Kathy or just somebody completely irrelevant to the brigade's options.
Once, yeah, if they put up Kathy, then are you saying Hayden sticks around over Kathy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just because I think, I mean, if one of the brigade's sidelines gets put up, then that person just gets cut. I don't think it's very likely that one of the brigade gets put up, so I don't see many signs in which Hayden goes home there.
I don't think even if one of the brigade goes up next to him, I think both of the other brigade members always vote to keep Hayden over any third member.
Yeah, I think Hayden.
Yeah.
I think Hayden was always the most secure within the brigade, like even leaving aside their sidelines or whatever.
I don't think Hayden, if on the nomination chair, could ever have received the majority of votes at a given week to go home.
Well,
I totally disagree there. I think a ludicrous statement.
How so?
Had Matt used the Diamond Power Veto correctly, in my view, and put
well,
up...
Well, I would have said go Enzo there.
No, well, no, that I don't see why. Though. Surely you just put up Hayden. How is that even a decision?
Yeah, it's...
Hayden is more threatening than Enzo in any way. Like, if you're Matt there, you are turning on the brigade, and so your priority has to be, firstly, getting a brigade member out, and secondly, ensuring that a brigade member is not going to win HOH next week and put you up. And Hayden is much more likely to do that than Enzo is.
Yeah, there would have been no reason to evict Enzo at that point.
Okay, well, who's voting out? Who are they voting Hayden out over?
Like Lane or Enzo, possibly?
All right, yeah, I agree with you that they might, they certainly should not, but I still think it's totally possible that they do keep Hayden.
See, I think if they put up, say, Hayden and Lane, then you're talking about the Matt, Brittany, Reagan crew that ends up evicting Hayden over him.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, yeah. Okay, well, okay. Then perhaps not literally every single week, but I will say Hayden was, without question, the most popular person in Big Brother 12, and I think pretty much every single move that got made at some point went through him.
Yeah.
Like, he was on the inside scoop on everything in that
yeah,
house.
And I think the fact that it would require such unusual circumstances to get him even possibly evicted at all is a testament to how well he played.
Well, but you guys say he's overly likable and, you know, was like a slam dunk to win. Meanwhile, he only won 4-3, and I think there was definitely some risk that he could have lost that game. So I don't think he was significantly more popular than Lane.
I think he wins 4-3 a lot, but I don't think, and 4-3 being worst-case scenario for him.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a Brian Hardick versus Clay situation,
exactly.
Where he wins by a narrow margin, but all of those votes he wins are almost locked in.
So you're telling me that you think both Enzo and Kathy were locked into Hayden? Because I'm not seeing that.
Over one of Lane or Enzo, once it was the final three, yeah. Okay. I think Hayden was remarkably well-liked
by
everyone.
I think that for Brennan and Rachel to vote for Lane is kind of unusual by itself. Like, there have been various rumors circulating about why they did that. And one of them is that Brittany deliberately spread lies about Hayden in the jury house to try and drum up votes for Lane.
Right, but that's a good reason to think that Lane might be able to beat Hayden at the end.
I hadn't heard about that.
I think it's totally possible that either Enzo, a bitter Enzo, or dumb Kathy could have ended up flipping their vote to Lane. I'm not convinced it was that slam dunk of a 4-3 vote for Hayden. I think there are definitely times where, you know, one jury question switches somebody around and he ends up losing 4-3 to Lane.
Hey, that's fair. Lane did put in a god-awful jury performance.
That's what I was about to say. When Lane answered Enzo's question, which is, would you have taken me? And he said, I don't know. The correct answer there is yes, and he might get Enzo's vote.
Yeah.
But the problem is, it's Lane, and he's not going to answer that question well, ever.
Yeah.
So if we're going to consider this all in the realistic terms, then you have to factor that in.
Sure. I think, for me, the thing with Hayden is, he played what I consider one of the best games ever in Big Brother 12, but I don't think that he plays nearly that well on the average season. Like, I think he got as Koss said, a very lucky table draw with his cast, and, I mean, he seems to be a likable guy, intelligent enough to do well in the game, but not, I think this is an outlier if you look at how you can expect him to play in general.
I think this is a lot like JT is in Survivor, which is, this guy ran insane. And had everything go right, but at the same time did nothing. It was all, it happened to him because of who he is, like, and who he will always be anytime he plays, which is a very good thing for him. He's not like an elite thinker, but he's a very capable player, super charismatic. Everyone feels like they can trust him, for the most part, at least. No one ever was talking like shit about Hayden or feeling like, oh, I can't, Hayden's acting shady or whatever. And again, Big Brother 12, I would say, certainly is an outlier, because I don't know where you're deducting so many points from that. And I'll say right now, bold statement, because June's been moved down, Hayden is now, I would say, his game in Big Brother 12, I can say this now with certainty, third strongest game that I've seen played. I think of the mortals who have won the game, this was the strongest one. And I'm not saying Hayden is the best player who has won the game, but I think this performance is the most flawless of the non-Dan and Wills.
Yeah, I can co-sign that.
Yeah, I agree as well. I mean, I have him at 4, and I could even bump him up ahead of Boogie, potentially. But like Dom said, I don't know if he's quite this good in a random season. That being said, I definitely have him in my top 10, and, you know, I'll get into that list when we get to the end of the show, but I think he definitely is, you know, somebody that belongs up there. I think he did run insanely hot in a JT-ish kind of way to win that season.
Yeah, I think Hayden doesn't really fit the archetype of what we think of as a great player. Like, he just seems to be the usual pretty standard jock who's, you know, not outwardly offensive or anything, but just, you know, pretty normal. You don't expect anything exceptional from him. So for him to be,
I think he's more than that.
Yeah, but yeah, I agree. But I'm saying for him to then be in the discussion as one of the greatest of all time seems kind of incongruous when you think about it. And that's why maybe people underestimate him.
It does seem like that until you start making out the list, and then you go, wow, there's nobody else to put up here.
Right. And for what it's worth, Matt Hoffman, when we spoke to him again, said that he thought very highly of Hayden's game, especially when rewatching it, like seeing things that he hadn't been able to see in person.
Yeah, and I think that speaks volumes about it, certainly. I think Hayden was super popular. I think he has a hard time, I really think he has a hard time losing jury votes in random seasons, certainly. Lane was a popular guy, certainly, at least within the people in that jury. So losing, beating Lane, I would say, is no joke, first of all. Especially with that jury makeup. I think Hayden, in summation, yeah, definitely his Big Brother 12 game, above what his average expectation would be, but I still think that average expectation is really high, and he's someone I surely will be talking about when we talk about our top 10 overall.
Okay. So we all happy to move on to Rachel? And then move on?
Well, not happy.
Very quickly? Yeah, not happy about it.
Okay. So, Rachel Riley, thoughts, opinions, anyone?
Worst winner ever. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I blurt that out already? Yeah.
Oh, wow. Get into that.
I mean, come on. It's Rachel Riley. She's horrible. She has no game in terms of, you know, dealing with people or anything like that. She's just, you know, I'm here to win competitions, do this, hang out with my boyfriend, blah, blah, blah. She got insanely lucky to be there in a situation where Grodner rigged the final six so she could stay alive. It's a terrible season. She's a terrible winner. Worst winner ever.
Big Brother 13 is an abortion. That said, I do not have Rich. If I'm forced to rank Dick, I would have his game in Big Brother 8 below this. But yeah, Rachel would be of the actual games, of the non-asterisks game. I can't pluralize it now.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Certainly bottom of the barrel, I would say. And this is a lesson in when you give production what they want, good things happen to you. Like when they have a tremendous amount of incentive to keep you on the show and like to keep people tuned in to either love you or hate you or watch you laugh or stare at your tits, they're going to help you out. And also when you can bang off competitions and when you're one of the few people trying, good things are going to happen. Now, Rachel relied a ton on competitions, which obviously is going to be at least in my book and I think in our general school of thought, a markdown. Like people say, oh, it's a stupid argument to say that Will didn't have to rely on winning competitions because winning competitions is a good thing. No, it's not a stupid argument. You can't count on winning competitions. And when you don't win competitions, you still need to be able to do things your way. And with Rachel, that's just never possible.
Right. People try to equate winning competitions and like masterminding things as strategies as if both of them are perfectly legitimate. And I always think this debate kind of gets derailed because yes, they are legitimate ways to win the game. Like, if someone wins through winning challenges, you're not going to take the check away from them. But that doesn't mean that that has the same like chance of giving you the win as trying to play in a more strategic way that does. Like, when you play using your mind, you have a certain element of control over what happens. Whereas a lot of these competitions are just crapshoots. Like, sure, if you could have this player who hypothetically could win every single competition with 100% certainty, then yes, maybe that could factor into your strategy. But as it is, if your plan relies on winning a competition, then it is a bad plan.
Yeah, no, I agree. When you need to win a competition, you've done something wrong.
And that's Rachel's entire game. There's no second part of it. That's it. And she was helped hugely out by her boyfriend coming back into the house after being evicted. Also, Jeff and Jordan end up breaking up, and Jordan sticks with Rachel because they're a returning player, and Jordan's an idiot. Rachel should have gone, I'm sorry, I can't even remember who won. Was it Portia that had the HOH in the final six?
Yeah,
so Rachel should have gone at final six had the game not been absurdly rigged there.
Portia not been a fucking idiot opening the thing for $10,000?
Yeah.
Well, assuming she even had that choice, but I mean, that's a debate for another time. So I think we're both agreed then. Rachel, at the bottom of each of our winners' lists.
Number 13, no question.
If I were forced to rank Dick on like a completely EV scale, his Big Brother game, how often that wins compared to Rachel's Big Brother 13 game, obviously Rachel can bang off competitions a non-zero percentage of the time, and that's higher than zero. But yeah, all things considered, bottom of the list for sure, on top of the worst season ever made.
Yeah, so depending on whether you include Dick or not, 12 or 13th, for sure.
And by the way, I love Rachel on TV. I don't love Brendan and Rachel, and I don't love Brendan on TV, but I think Rachel, on her own, I think she knows. It's not so much that I'm always entertained by it, because it obviously is completely fucked out and predictable by now, but she knows very much what she's doing, and I like that she plays into that, and I think Big Brother was, I guess at the end of the day, probably worse for Rachel just because of Big Brother 13. I don't know. I feel like we were a bit hard on Rachel here. And overall, I've had certainly plenty of good times with Rachel. But yeah, her actual, even thinking about her as a player in this conversation where we're talking about some of the elites, especially the guys we're about to get to, makes me want to never stop vomiting.
Yeah, but I think Big Brother is a good venue for enjoying Rachel as a TV character. Like when she was on The Amazing Race, we saw all the same stuff getting played out with the whole Brent and Rachel drama. But it was never as interesting as it is on Big Brother for some reason.
Yeah, go green team.
That's right. Carlos, any final thoughts on Rachel?
I'm going to go cry in the bushes.
All right, well.
That is a perfectly acceptable reaction. So are we all having to move on to Ian then?
Yes.
Okay, so I want to go last on this. You two talk about Ian.
This is what I will say about Ian. This is what I want to begin this segment by saying. Ian Terry is going to get to wake up every morning for the rest of his life and be Big Brother winner, Ian Terry. And for that, I could not be happier for this kid. I think that is fantastic. That said, he stumbled ass backwards into this. And I'm sure Koss is going to have, we're going to be transitioning from here after we talk about Ian into Dan and Will. And I'm sure Dan's going to be coming up plenty here. So first, right off the bat, I loved watching Ian on TV. I love how enthusiastic he was for this game. I feel like he's going to give himself more credit than he deserves, and people are going to give him too little credit, like not enough credit, generally speaking. But that being said, I don't think they're going to be giving him not enough credit by much. I don't think he had too much to do with this, although having seen this thing that actually someone posted on the Dom and Colin podcast Facebook wall, where he laid out this kind of Quack Pack-esque strategy ahead of time, maybe the kid's just brilliant and onto something and we're all morons. I don't know. I'm sure we're going to have a ton to say about Ian, so I'm going to let Koss now pull out the jizz rag and start talking about Dan.
No, I'm going to go with Ian.
Okay.
The thing he posted for the strategy of week 2 to 5 throw competitions, it's maybe the most simplistic thing you could ever post and, you know, preach it up as some incredible creation. Truth is, it's like basic Big Brother strategy that he had. The pieces that he had on there, like being number four in the alliance, I mean, no kidding, you want to be number four in the alliance. It's not that hard, but the pieces that he had written on there didn't fit in. He just jammed in whoever was in the game. I think too much is being made of that as being some incredible strategy. I think he definitely stumbled backwards into both the Quack Pack, which he did not create, he merely named. In fact, he really didn't even name it. I think Brittany did. And then, you know, he got, granted, he made a couple real good moves to win competitions when he needed to, and he evicted the right people when he needed to, but he really stumbled into it completely at the end of the game when he should have been evicted at Final Four. I think looking back, as much as I hate to say it, that is going to end up being the mistake that cost Dan. I think Ian botched the end game pretty terribly and then just got extremely lucky at the end. I don't think he's a very good winner at all. I think, you know, it's great to see a superfan win the game. I just wish the superfan would have executed better on the strategies he had coming into the house. Go for it, Dom.
Okay, good. I've been waiting for this all day. So, see, the thing with Ian is, people like to say that he's a likable guy, that whenever people make criticisms of his game, it's always framed as, oh, well, maybe he did this wrong, but it's great to see him win. And this is shocking to me. Like, as someone who is coming into the season, I expected to relate to Ian more than I think most of the audience would, and yet I still just, I'm frustrated that he won as a bitter, desperate Dan fan. It's like, I think back to Survivor South Pacific when the internet hated Cochran for just doing what he thought was in his best interest, even if it maybe ended up being irrational. And yet I think Cochran was eminently more likable than Ian ever was or could ever hope to be. Like, at least with Cochran, his humor was self-aware, it was self-deprecating. It didn't feel forced. It was just his sincere reaction as someone who loved the game he was playing. With Ian, it's like, firstly, his delusion about his own abilities doesn't endear him to me at all. And I don't think that adding Quack onto the end of a sentence automatically makes it hilarious in the way that a lot of people seem to. So I wasn't happy to see him win on a personal level. As a fan of the game, like, it's maybe even more frustrating because Ian, firstly, had probably the worst start for any player that we're going to discuss on this podcast, winners and non-winners alike. Like, his first week was an abomination, and one thing that never seemed to come up in these discussions is, if Boogie hadn't won the coach's exemption that week and chose to save Ian, I think Ian would be gone, and he'd be a footnote in the history of Big Brother right now.
And that's so, a bold claim.
No, it's not. I think he's absolutely correct.
Yeah. Like, if Ian had been nominated that week, he would have gone home. Like, that is
how can you say anything with any degree of certainty about what would have happened in week one of Big Brother 14? There was some craziness going on in this house.
Because you saw on the show and on the live feeds, all the people get together and say, this kid is a freak. He has to get out of it. Obviously you can't be completely certain, but I think there's a high probability that Ian would just be gone. And I don't think you can say that about any other winner on this list. Like, most of them, except possibly Rachel, all of them are going to survive a certain length into a Big Brother game just because they have that natural set of skills. Ian doesn't. And even if you can argue that maybe he developed it over the course of the season, that doesn't make him a great player. It makes him someone who stumbled as you said, Colin, just ass backwards into a win. Like, if you look at all of the opportunities for him to go home in the game, there are times where if he hadn't had a certain stroke of luck or certain things hadn't gone his way, then he would have gone right there and then, or his chances of winning would have gone down the drain. So, for instance, when Frank wins HOH at Final Eight, if Ian doesn't have the veto ball there, Ian's gone. And you can argue that maybe he would have been unlucky that Frank specifically won HOH there, but that would never have been a problem if Ian hadn't been so arrogant to Boogie on the way out of the door. Just something completely unnecessary, didn't need to say anything at all, and he would have been safe. No one would even have had him on their radar. Instead, he created a situation where he could perfectly conceivably have gone home if he didn't win what was essentially a crapshoot. And similarly, at Final Six, he goes home if not for the power of veto, and I imagine Final Five as well. If he doesn't win a competition that round, he's gone. And similarly, at Final Four, he should have gone. I agree with you, Cos, that that's going to be Dan's mistake when we look back on it, although I'll save that for in a minute. But again, even though Dan ended up saving him, that was an unforced error on Dan's part. Ian had no part in that whatsoever. And retroactively, people like to say, oh, maybe Ian was projecting an image of weakness so that people would do this and that. But no, Ian generally was a non-factor in the game for as long as these things were being considered. Like, as much as you... as much as we like to bag on people like Adam or Jordan for some of the stupid things they did, at least they had their finger on the pulse of the game throughout. They all had a basic awareness of what was going on. Ian didn't have that, and I think the fact that he's a super fan who, you know, has glasses and talks about the game a lot, I think blinds people to that fact. They assume that he has to be some kind of under-the-radar mastermind, when in fact he is the Fabio Big Brother.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's the general idea, is that when you're in a situation like Ian was in, where he, because Dan just kind of like missed it, everyone, Ian genuinely, I think, had no reason to believe that he didn't create the Quack Pack for quite some time, all the way through to the end. And then when the jury, like, he would say, oh, and then I created the Quack Pack, and the jury would like applaud him and go, oh yeah, you did. And as if they weren't there when they also were forming the Silent Six right before that, and then just brought Ian back in case, like, right, for a second bet.
Right, but on an abstract level, if you're Ian there and you have any degree of self-awareness, do you really think that Brittany and Dan, two players who have played the game before and showed that, like, in Brittany's case, maybe not a great player, but she's at least above average, and Dan, who's one of the greatest of all time, do you really think that they're just sitting there, you know, waiting for Ian to come and form this alliance with them, as if they're helpless without his input? No, of course not.
But that's the thing, Ian is delusional enough to think that they actually are, which is amazing.
Right. And also, when you see the intensity of Frank and Boogie's reaction to being quote-unquote betrayed in their own words by that same group that you're now forming an alliance with, shouldn't it cross your mind that maybe they've had this deal going with multiple people other than you?
Maybe it should.
It definitely should.
Like, yeah.
And for most of the winners on this list, it would have done. And even
also,
for most of the non-winners as well. Yeah, go ahead, Cos.
Also, I think one thing that gets overlooked is a huge error on Ian's part is when he evicts Boogie, you know, it's like clap, clap, way to go. That's, you know, potentially at least a good move. If you're going to stick with the Quack Pack, go ahead and vote out Boogie. But Ian is such an egomaniac and thinks so much of his own game that he has to get in one last jab before Boogie walks out the door. He says, you know, it was me, get the step in. So what does Boogie do? He immediately goes to Frank right before he's walking out the door and says, don't trust Ian. I mean, if Ian just keeps his mouth shut, then Frank and Ian aren't at each other's throats. You know, Ian is not pegged as the guy who ratted them out. So, you know, Ian has just as much of an ego as somebody like Boogie, in my mind. I think he just comes across as endearing to a certain part of the country that I just don't understand. I'm with Dom. I didn't find him all that likable at all, really. I think he came across as just very naive and did not have his finger on the pulse of the game at any point. He just happened to be America's sweetheart, stumbled backwards into a win, and now he's getting to take all the credit for things he didn't do.
Yeah, and to reinforce the point about how delusional he is, in all the post-game interviews he's been doing, he said that at Final Four, when he thought he was allowed to go home, and again, like, that in itself shows that he had no idea what was going on that round and had no influence over the final outcome. He said that he thought, well, okay, this is fine, but at least I can be remembered as the Rob Cesternino or Stephen Fishback of the season. You know, it's like, yeah, automatically, it's like coming in the same position as somebody doesn't automatically make you the same as them. Like, Adam Pott came in third last season. That doesn't make him a fantastic player.
I had not heard him say that. I'm sure Koss is now all up in arms about that.
I'm fuming after that. I didn't hear that either, but it just speaks to how delusional he is as a player to think, I won, and I have glasses, so I must be a genius. Or, I created this super simplistic strategy that everyone else already uses, and because I wrote it down before the game and can jam in players who don't actually even fit into what I wrote, I'm a genius. It's disappointing to me.
But if you look at that sheet of paper and look at the strategies that he wrote down on it, he didn't actually execute on half of them. And that's not because he found a better way, it's because he was incapable of doing so.
Yeah, it was like Brittany was filling in the role of, like, older guy on his alliance sheet.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just...
Okay.
And the culmination of his stupidity, I think, was throwing part one of the final HOH competition. Like, that is...
He tried to throw part three, right? He was sitting there frowning as he was getting them right.
No, he...
I don't think so.
No, he didn't. But throwing part one, that's an unforgivable error. No matter what happens after that, that disqualifies you from being in the discussion as one of the all-time greats, I think.
Oh, is that what eliminated him from being the discussion as one of the all-time greats?
I mean, that's a great point. He threw it for no reason other than to show his allegiance to Dan, which makes no sense at all.
Right, and it's not as if he dragged Dan to the end knowing that he was a goat. He's been saying that he did that post-game, but in his interviews, in his DRs, he's saying, even if I knew for sure I would lose to Dan, I would take him anyway to honour my commitment. And we've seen some people, like on Survivor and Big Brother, do that and win anyway, but in their case... they were advantaged enough in a potential jury vote anyway that it didn't even matter to them. So, like, for Ian to do that when the outcome is eminently uncertain, when you're going up against someone who's won the only unanimous jury vote in the show's history and who's shown that he can convince people to do what he wants at the drop for a hat, it's just absurd.
Well, how'd that go?
Yeah, who's got the chips? But it's like... I don't know.
No, okay, well, this is... Oh, hold on one second. I just had, okay. This is what I would say about that, which is the other end of that promise, and maybe we can transition, we can begin to transition at least into Dan from here, is on the other end of that commitment was his grandfather's cross and being sworn up and down, which I think changes things. And just before we get into
why?
Dan, before we, why?
Yeah, why does it change anything?
In Ian's mind, like clearly for Ian, that was a difference, like, when
right,
he,
and
when
that shows Dan, why he's an idiot.
Right, but I'm saying, okay, and I'm not necessarily arguing that. My point here is that collateral should not be allowed, because clearly Ian kept bringing up, oh my god, this guy was, apparently Dan was not going to actually screw him, but of course he wants to make Ian look like a patsy before the votes go in, so when he's saying, oh, I wasn't going to take him, Ian's all up in arms because he's like, dude, you gave me your grandfather's cross, like that was a big thing to him, and say similarly with Frank in the Bible.
Right, and I mean, I think that speaks more to, again, not to get on my Dan fan box, but I think that speaks more to how good Dan is at convincing these people of, you know, here's this stupid little trinket, and if I promise on it, you're going to believe whatever I say. I mean, that just speaks to the complete ignorance of people in the house.
Okay, no, and I'm not saying, given that it is within the rules of the game, that's fine. I'm just saying, I think from this point forward, collateral should be no good within Big Brother, like we saw with Janelle earlier, too. Like, I really, apart from, like, what they did in Big Brother 10 with the $10,000 bars, or the $1,000 bars, I really feel like wedding rings and stuff like that should be really out of bounds.
What about two packs of smokes? Is that okay?
That's totally fine with me.
Okay.
In Big Brother 2, that was, like, a big deal. People were trading, like, health bars for smokes, and say it was a really ironic trade. Like, Hardy was ditching off all his granola bars for cigarettes.
Well, that was JoJo's, like, biggest campaign stay in the house.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I guess let's wrap up on Ian here. You know, Ian's got, I'm sure, whatever, Ian can stand a bit of criticism as he's on his way to the bank. So where do we have Ian now on our list, guys?
Well, I've got him at number 10, and I'll be interested to see if you guys can get him on this podcast, because if you can, I kind of hope he listens back to this and says, you know, maybe I was a little delusional, but I got him at number 10.
Okay. I have, like I said, Rachel, Jordan, and Dick at the bottom as, like, in a separate class of their own. Of the remaining winners, I have Ian as the worst, so Ian's at number 10.
Ian is at number 10 for me as well by the exact same process.
Okay, excellent. So what do you want to move on to now then, guys?
I mean, if we want to take a break, just... Yeah, we'll figure out where we want to go from here.
All right, sounds good.
All right.